Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Your bed and you're done. Night Skin is convenient, affordable, and best of all, risk-free by dialing 1-800-488-8417. Dial 1-800-488-8417. That number again, 1-800-488-8417.
We are all fools at one time or another. Buddha said the fool who knows he is a fool is much wiser. The fool who thinks he is wise is a fool indeed. How true this is. And for a while the fool's mischief tastes sweet, sweet as honey. But in the end it turns bitter, and how bitterly we suffer. Well, if you're interested in not suffering anymore and maybe want to take a different approach to your life, I might be able to help in one small way. Here on KRXA on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m., I offer my radio program Aspire. I hope you will do me the honor of listening, and maybe the two of us can find that divine wisdom that has always lived within us, and we just were too foolish to recognize. Come Aspire.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. President Obama says all that talk about your grandkids' kids having to pay for the stimulus and all this debt.
I refuse to leave our children with a debt that they cannot repay. And that means taking responsibility right now in this administration for getting our spending under control.
Mr. Obama's been making speeches and has a big one set for tomorrow night to the nation. His continuing pledge to go after the waste in the budget and to cut the deficit he's inherited by half by the year after his term in office is done. The president proposes his first spending plan to Congress on Thursday. On Wall Street, the major indexes haven't been this low in years. The S&P, for example, is flirting with 12-year lows. The Dow lost nearly 251 points today. The NASDAQ was off more than 53.
Until there's a real roadmap, I think many are afraid to invest either in the stock market or in businesses.
That's stocks analyst Eugene Peroni at Advisors Asset Management. Speaking of to the President's Economic Summit earlier today, Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com said dramatic action is required.
Whether from a natural disaster, a terrorist attack, or a financial calamity, crises of the magnitude of the current one only end with overwhelming government action. The cost to taxpayers of all this will be significant, but a less aggressive response would cost taxpayers measurably more.
A new CBS News New York Times poll. So what do we think about all this?
I'm Dan Revive. A CBS News New York Times poll finds confidence in Mr. Obama making the right economic decisions, yet our survey director, Sarah Dutton, says
more Americans disapprove than approve of having the federal government provide money to banks and financial institutions. 50% disapprove, just 39% approve.
And bailing out car companies, 3-1 against that. But on the housing rescue, 3-1 in favor with mixed emotions. Preventing foreclosures will make them feel relief, but resentment toward people with big houses and mortgages. Dan Revive, CBS News.
2 feet of snow in some parts of Maine snapped the tree limbs, brought down power lines, toppled utility poles, and brought out the construction crews. People have been gathered in warming centers all around the state. Are you one of those people who can get so angry your chest hurts? There really is a connection.
This tells us that the reason why this happens is because anger actually brings on measurable electrical instability that is associated with arrhythmias.
Dr. Rachel Lampert at Yale University says anger can cause electrical changes in your heart that can make it beat funny. And there's nothing funny about that. New York City's Parking Violations Bureau had no problem playing Scrooge to the man dressed as Santa Claus. Chip Cafiero was giving out toys back in the holidays to poor children, but his car was in a no-parking zone. He was double-parked, and the city refused to forgive the $115 parking ticket. Santa, in this case, is a 60-year-old retired school teacher. This is CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your tires, your brakes, your battery, your oil and filter, your fluid levels, and your belts and hoses.
Could you check us, please?
Okay, okay. I'm on my way to the Ford dealer now for the Works Fuel Saver Pack. It'll all get checked or tested or changed or rotated or filled for just $29.95 or less after a $10 mail-in rebate.
Woohoo! I love this guy!
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for rebate details through 3/31/09.
Hi, I'm the foreman of a construction company. We just added Aflac as one of the benefits we provide for our employees. At no direct cost to the company, Aflac makes our foundation of benefits even stronger. My crew is so happy with Aflac, they're going on and on about it.
Hammer out the specifics. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Drink your milk. Eat your leafy greens. Jim Taylor says they're good for you.
Nearly 500,000 AARP members taking part in this study.
It's a huge analysis. So you have to pay attention to the findings.
John Anderson is paying attention. He's a nutrition expert, University of North Carolina. He calls this another piece of mounting evidence that a calcium-rich diet does reduce the risk of some cancer. And the study does stress foods over supplements.
All the dairy foods, including yogurt, are high in calcium. The other foods are typically dark green vegetables.
And most dried beans, too. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Over the past three nights, FBI agents have led raids against pimps with teenage prostitutes, some as young as 13. Operation Cross Country hit cities in concert with local police from Miami to Chicago to Anchorage. Dozens of alleged pimps have been arrested. At least 45 children taken from the streets. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Referrals. Simple word, right? To a small business, referrals are solid gold. So how do you stir them up? Email marketing from ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get easy-to-use templates to showcase your business with photos and coupons. And best of all, it's easy for your customers to pass them along to others. In other words, help you generate the almighty referral. Plans as low as $15 a month. Get your free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com. And let the referrals begin.
Here's a little tip for all you travelers out there. There's no better souvenir than a free night. Just stay twice at Econo Lodge, Roadway Inn, or any Choice Hotel, and you'll earn a free night at up to 1,500 hotels through the Choice Privileges Rewards Program. That's right, free, as in on the house. I mean, on the hotel. So make your travel budget go further with Econo Lodge or Roadway Inn at 800-4-CHOICE or choicehotels.com.
Free night requires 6,000 or 8,000 points. Requires 2 stays booked at choicehotels.com or 800-4-CHOICE. Valid 25 through 4309. Details at choicehotels.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. He didn't walk away with any Oscars last night. I'm feeling pretty good. Glad to have you with us. A shout out to our new late night listeners in Portland, Oregon on AM 620 KPOJ and our new live listeners every weekday afternoon on KMPT AM 930 in Missoula. We've got a segment for the attention of Montanans coming up here to kick off the show in just a moment. Also on today's program, you're going to meet two retired military officers who speak up for peace and an end to torture. Later this hour, former Rear Admiral Don Guter, he's retired, now the Dean of the Duquesne Law School and a member of the team called CampaignToBanTorture.org. He's going to be with us to talk to me a little bit because I've been disheartened, as you know, by the Obama administration's recent legal moves in the case of Binyan Mohammed and the appeals trial here in San Francisco, as well as Friday's late afternoon two-line announcement that they support the same position as the Bush administration, that the individuals who are held, I call them prisoners, not just detainees, at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan have no right to access to the American courts. Now, that's a thorny issue. I certainly grant them that. But the lack of change here, the lack of any kind of nuanced difference between Obama and Bush and their legal advisors is very troubling to me. So we're going to talk to the Admiral/Dean later this hour. Next hour, Colonel Ann Wright, who served 29 years in the Army, then went to the State Department and resigned in protest after the invasion of Iraq. She'll be with us to talk about her recent trip to Gaza, and she's returning there in a couple of weeks. And also, if there's time, we'll talk with her a little bit about women serving in Iraq. And when the moment arises, we'll talk with you about the Oscar Awards. I was very pleased that the Harvey Milk film and Sean Penn's lead actor role got recognition in a Slumdog Millionaire year. Also on today's program, should we nationalize the banks? And in fact, is that what the Obama administration will do? They're just looking for the right moment. Professor Thomas Ferguson from the University of Massachusetts Boston and Robert Johnson. They co-authored a piece in The Nation that you can read at thenation.com about nationalizing the banks. So we'll discuss that. And your calls and comments are welcome at any moment. You can join this conversation toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 is my toll-free number. And my email's always on peter@peterbcollins.com. Thank you, Bono. Horses are the theme of this first half hour. We're joined by Jay Trunzo of Horse Haven, Montana. She is co-founder of that organization. Jay, welcome to our program today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good
thanks
to talk
so
with you. And Dave Pauly joins us as well from the Humane Society of the U.S. He is a member of the North Rockies Animal Protection Team. Dave, how are you? Oh, let's see. Dave, do I have you?
I'm sorry. Yes, you do. I had my phone on mute.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, thank you, Peter.
Well, I was looking to see if I'd made a mistake here and plugged you into the wrong box or something, but welcome to our program, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Now, Jay, you sent me some information about moves afoot in Montana, including possible legislation, to legalize slaughter of horses. What's the current status of the law in Montana related to killing horses or, you know, having a slaughterhouse and essentially a mechanized operation for dispatching horses?
Well, very briefly, and Dave certainly, I think, can address that a lot better than I because he's involved with the legislature all the time. But very basically, we supply the here in Montana, we're feeding horses into a Canadian slaughterhouse and a Mexican slaughterhouse, but we do not currently have a slaughterhouse plant in the state of Montana.
And Dave, in a broader sense, in the Rockies, is there a legal slaughterhouse for horses?
No, Peter. In fact, there's not in the United States. The last three in Illinois and Texas were shuttered about 2 years ago.
Okay. And, Jay, what are your concerns here? I can certainly understand that people want animals to be treated humanely. What is your concern if slaughtering of horses is legalized and a slaughterhouse might be set up in Montana?
You know, and certainly we've had that, we've seen that before. I want to say at the outset, it's a very complicated issue. Obviously, I'm involved in rescue and adoption, and so I have a certain perspective. But I do want to stress for your listeners, it's not that I am an animal rights activist. I support rodeo. I eat meat. I support cattle ranching. But horses that are sent to slaughter are treated, and there's countless evidence, documented evidence, proof that they are treated, handled in the most inhumane ways. It is not a humane situation. The other problem is, and it's very, as I say, it's very complicated and there are a lot of aspects to it, but that's sort of the crux of it. The other thing is that what we're looking at is we have a lot of unwanted horses, and the problem in America is that there are a lot of unwanted horses. But the problem didn't develop overnight, and the problem will not be solved by which the proponents say, by bring back a slaughterhouse. The problem goes to so many issues, indiscriminate breeding, excessively and inappropriately high prices for hay, irresponsibility in horse ownership, lack of education. We need tax incentives for growing lower-cost hay, for keeping agriculture in the state.
Mm-hmm.
We need subsidies and the veterinary industry to work with horse owners on lower-cost euthanasia so that an animal that is no longer usable, an animal that's old or infirm or in pain, can be euthanized, and that's the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest, that's one of the biggest problems, the idea that they are treated in a very, very inhumane way. The other thing is that in all of the towns and cities where they have had plants, they say that the environmental degradation has just been devastating to their communities. So any few jobs that are created by mm-hmm. having a slaughterhouse is more than negated by the degradation that is caused to a community. Real estate values go down. People in communities have reported blood flowing into their rivers. I mean, carcasses, horrific odors.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that you have a tremendous number of wonderful, viable, usable, rideable animals going to slaughter that should not be.
So, Dave, tell us what the big picture here is. How many horses are there who are running wild in the West or who are unclaimed, shall we say, that present a challenge in terms of how to handle them and what to do with them when it is time to put them down?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that Jay framed it very well. The numbers aren't out there, Peter. There's really no reporting. We've been trying to get numbers from Montana in particular as to the number of stray horses, stray or abandoned horses. I've been here 17 years, and the complaints have not statistically increased in the last 3 years since mm-hmm. the slaughter plants closed. And in the states like California and Illinois and Texas where the plants were closed or where export was prohibitive, the number of cases of cruelty did not increase. The only statistically relevant thing is that the number of horse thefts in those states where slaughter was stopped decreased dramatically, sometimes 30-40%.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's there really isn't a firm number. I hear all the time about 300 horses released on the Crow Reservation or here or there, but when I call the tribal authorities, they're phantom horses. They haven't been physically touched by anybody, and nobody can tell me where they are. So I think it's a combination of certainly there are some out there, and some states have seen people abandon horses, but it's not an epidemic by any stretch.
Mm-hmm. And, Jay, what are the arguments of the, I'm not sure they would call themselves pro-slaughter, but those who favor this, is it that they feel there is a large number of unwanted animals and that they can't be handled on a ranch-by-ranch basis?
You know, it's a lot of different answers to that excellent question. And I should say that people are very willing to say that they're pro-slaughter. I mean, people do not have compunctions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it's a very complicated issue. It's also become very politicized. It has to do with, you know, people not wanting the government to tell them what to do. People, you know, a lot of people have said, well, it's the pro-slaughter people think of horses as livestock, and you people who are anti-slaughter think of them as pets. And I say it really doesn't matter what you call them. You can call them anything. I mean, they are technically livestock, but that still doesn't justify, you know, inhumane treatment, neglect, etc. The arguments are many. You have, if you have a breeding operation, for example, if you have a big horse breeding operation and you're breeding for a certain quality of horse, and I bet Dave could address this, you know, this is part of the problem that happens with puppy mills and the breeding of dogs. What do you do with those that are not up to par? What do you do with those that are born with deformities that may not be have the best conformation? What do you do with those that you can't sell? What do you do with those that you bred for reining or cutting and they don't cut it? Just like in horse racing. I mean, it's the same thing. What do you do with those that are not making it at the track?
Mm-hmm.
And the proponents of slaughter would say we've got to have a means for disposing of them that's economically viable. That's where the issues come in of perhaps indiscriminate breeding. You take a loss. If it's an animal that is not capable of being placed in a home, in a rescue with a family, spend its years on the ranch, etc., euthanize it, put it down. It's the idea, it's sort of an economic thing that people are saying we have to have a means of disposing of animals that we no longer want.
Jay, I've got to run to a break, so hold that thought and we'll return with Jay Trunzo. Her website is horsehavenmt.org. That's Horsehaven, Montana. Horsehavenmt.org. And Dave Pauly is with us too from the Humane Society. He's with the Northern Rockies Animal Protection Team. And if you have a question or comment, I'd like to hear from you. Just get out of the saddle and give us a call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Good Vibration.
Tools for Transformation
is being preempted by sports programming this month.
We'll run encore presentations of some of your favorite shows on the internet, so tune in. Good Vibration.
Saturdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Tomorrow Matters is back on air Sundays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Green Talk Radio for the Central Coast.
I'm Deborah Lindsay.
And I'm Spencer Lindsay.
Join us as we dazzle you with local solutions to environmental issues.
We'll be talking about things like climate change,
green building,
alternative energy and transportation,
water conservation,
organic farming,
and bicycles,
and a whole lot more.
Join us on KRXA 540 a.m. Sunday mornings at 10.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi. A Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Should Montana legalize horse slaughtering? Or are there other options that are more humane? We're talking with Jay Trunzo. The website at her organization is horsehavenmt.org. That's Horsehaven, Montana. And Dave Pauly from the Humane Society's North Rockies Animal Protection Team. Dave, just before the break, Jay posed a bunch of important questions there. What do you do when, a horse isn't viable and the cost is too great for the owner and they have options, some responsible, some others? But there are people in the pro-slaughter side who claim that there really is no choice. You simply must send them to an abattoir to be dispatched. What are the available options, Dave, in your view?
Well, there's actually several, and I there is a substantial difference between dogs and horses, especially about 1,000 pounds of weight. But we've learned in the last four decades that euthanasia, or killing, is not the solution to an animal overpopulation problem. It's not the only solution. So it has to be a broad base of things. We currently are contracepting mares in several private herds and lots of wild horses with PZP that is made right here in Montana. So birth control for mares is one option.
Mm-hmm.
The gelding of stallions is certainly an option. The industry is trying to say that, slaughter is the solution to the overpopulation. But I think we found in many ways that it actually exacerbates the problems. And it supports this breeding or culling mentality that you raise 40 foals so that you can have a half a dozen that are high quality and then the rest are disposable.
Mm-hmm.
And we really think selective breeding is a key. So selective breeding, use of horse sanctuaries. We actually think, Peter, that if horse export is banned, a whole cottage industry of equine services will come up, geriatric horse care, mobile vet clinics, even mobile euthanasia and burial trailers. Whole bunch of things that could help solve this problem and not try to concentrate 1,500 animals or 2,000 animals
mm-hmm.
in one slaughter plant.
All right, let's take a call. Ann's on the line from Missoula, listening on KMPT. Welcome, Ann. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi. I was just calling to say that I think it would be more humane to slaughter the horses rather than let them sit out there and starve to death. But I'm not sure how you would decide which horses to and which horses not to kill.
Mm-hmm. Jay, what's your comment?
If an animal is starving, there are many organizations that, assume if the animal is starving, the person can probably no longer afford to keep it. I alone cannot solve all the problems, but certainly I get calls every single week from people asking if I can find a home for their horse because they can no longer afford to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is quite an extensive and growing network of people who we are all working with. We're getting almost as many calls from people wanting to adopt from us. So I think one of the alternatives is calling a rescue or calling a sanctuary. I was just able to get hay donated to a family that's going to adopt a few horses.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people out there willing to and trying to help.
right, Jay, let me stop you there. Ann, I'm short of time here, but I would like to send you a DVD because we're welcoming callers from our new affiliate there in Missoula. So please hold on the line and continue this discussion with your friends, okay?
Okay.
All right, Ann. Thank you very much. And, Jay, I've mentioned your website, horsehavenmtformontana.org. Dave, what's your website? Where can people get more information from the Humane Society?
HSUS.org.
HSUS.org. Well, I thank you both for joining us today to at least get the issue on the table, and I hope that people will continue to discuss this and that you have a full and open debate in Montana before any decisions are made. Jay, thank you,
Peter.
Thanks for bringing this to my attention. And Dave, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it.
And this is a tune we ordinarily play at the end of the program, but for our horse-loving friends, here's Roy Rogers.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. This week, President Obama will be unveiling his first budget. It could conceivably top $3 trillion since it includes plans for health care reform, dealing with climate change, plus the $1 trillion stimulus, bank bailout, foreclosure prevention, and revenue shock from the economic crisis. That's an awful lot. Yet he says he still intends to cut the present trillion-plus dollar deficit in half by the end of his first term in 2013. But this weekend, he said, we can't tackle anything unless we tackle everything.
We can't produce shared prosperity without firm rules of the road, and we can't generate sustained growth without getting our deficits under control. In short, we cannot successfully address any of our problems without addressing them all.
The unveiling process will start today in a private meeting of usual suspects.
That work begins on Monday, when I will convene a fiscal summit of independent experts and unions, advocacy groups, and members of Congress to discuss how we can cut the $1 trillion deficit that we've inherited.
More after this.
Larry Kenny here with an important message concerning prostate health. Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Well, don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 50, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. So what do you do? See your doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate is a natural supplement that helps your body maintain prostate health. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same healthy benefits of one Beta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, call 1-800-390-3621. That's 1-800-390-3621. With Beta Prostate, your satisfaction is guaranteed or you get your money back. Call 1-800-390-3621 right now. 1-800-390-3621.
Can President Obama really pull a rabbit out of the hat and halve the deficit by raising taxes of business and the wealthy? Economics professor Peter Morici of the University of Maryland doesn't see how.
Cutting the deficit in half by 2013 is a pipe dream. The stimulus package is not very efficient, so it won't create nearly as many jobs as he anticipates. Consequently, in 2010, we'll have another stimulus package to get the job done. The deficit will remain out of control for the remainder of his presidency.
Says Mike Allen of Politico.
What the president desperately needs to do is show the markets and show citizens that he knows what he's doing, that even though they're not going to see exactly what road he's taking, that he's pointed the right direction.
You'll see, says President Obama.
On Thursday, I'll release a budget that's sober in its assessments, honest in its accounting, and lays out in detail my strategy for investing in what we need, cutting what we don't, and restoring fiscal discipline.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
On day two of the Obama administration, the new president signed a series of executive orders with a flourish, honoring a campaign promise to order the closure of Guantanamo Bay and the prison camp there. But since then, we've seen disturbing report after report about continuity with the Bush administration on torture, on detention. Well, maybe not on torture, I got to take that back. But on surveillance of Americans, it's still a problem.
For 40 days. Only a spark to light my way. I want to give out. I want to give in. This is our crime. This is our sin. But I still believe. I still believe. Through the pain and through the grief.
Now, I still want to believe that Barack Obama is sincere as a former constitutional law professor. That he wants to return us to compliance with international treaties and our own constitution. But at this point, I have to say, I'm not sure. And Friday, late in the day in Washington, lawyers from the Justice Department filed documents, again maintaining the dubious position of the Bush administration, this time related to the detention of individuals at Bagram Air Base outside Kabul, Afghanistan. The two-line statement read, having considered the matter, the government adheres to its previously articulated position. What he's saying is the detainees in Afghanistan have no legal right to challenge their imprisonment the way that the Supreme Court forced the Bush administration to accept habeas corpus and other fundamental rights for those held at Guantanamo Bay. Joining me now to comment on this is retired Rear Admiral Don Guter, 32 decorated years in the United States Navy, and he went on after that to serve as the dean of the Duquesne University Law School. That's his alma mater. Admiral Guter, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you. It's good to be with you this evening.
It's nice to talk with you, and I also want to mention that you're part of the campaign to ban torture, and if people want to go to the website, it's a long one, but campaigntobantorture.org is the web address.
Correct.
Admiral Guter, tell me your thoughts. You heard my introduction, and I can imagine you might have been on the same roller coaster ride since January 22nd.
Well, a little bit. I think all of us that were involved in this effort are watching closely the actions of the new administration. I understand how it would give some people pause. I feel like we've been given some assurances, however, that the administration wants to proceed slowly and carefully and analyze every one of these issues, as you probably are aware. The new administration is not even fully aware yet of all the memoranda and orders, even perhaps secret executive orders that might be out there. That's one issue.
The Attorney General is starting his third week on the job.
Right. And the second point is that all those positions aren't filled yet. So our view is that we want to still be vigilant and push the agendas that we were pushing prior to the inauguration, but we're still hopeful because of the assurances that we've been given that we're not going to just see a continuance of the Bush policies in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that President Obama intentionally framed his issues around Guantanamo to demonstrate something to the world while maintaining either flexibility or even a kind of contradictory position behind the scenes? And there I offer you the contrast between Guantanamo Bay and Bagram.
I think you have to understand that we're talking about two different situations between Guantanamo and Bagram. Guantanamo, even when that struggle was going on in the courts, some people had asked me whether or not I thought this was a slippery slope, the folks that were concerned that indeed this would translate directly to the detention facilities overseas. And my position on that was, while I understand that you're concerned that it could be a slippery slope legally, that there were many distinctions that could be drawn between Guantanamo and Bagram. And not to make this a legalistic argument, but the fact of the matter is that the way that the argument was won on Guantanamo was to show basically that although the usual standard is sovereignty, that the United States maintained such complete and utter control over Guantanamo Bay Naval Base that it was the equivalent of sovereignty. If you're looking at Afghanistan, you're talking about a sovereign nation that they have their own say as to what goes on in their country, of course. And so Guantanamo was a completely unique situation for the United States and for the United States military, which, as far as all our research turned up in all of my years in the military, we have no other such agreement with anyone around the globe. For most places where we are stationed, if they tell us to leave, we work out an arrangement where we leave. In Guantanamo, that's not so. To the point where in Guantanamo, even when they, for example, cut off our water supply to try to make us leave, we built desalinization plants and still refused to go. The same's not true when you're dealing with Afghanistan, you know, a sovereign nation, which at any time could tell us to leave their territory, and I presume under the right circumstances that would be negotiated diplomatically, but eventually we would leave that area.
Well, Admiral Guder, I respect that difference. I don't think it's hair-splitting or, you know, excessively legalistic. My issue, though, is that we really need to put an end to detention without charge, without limit, and that whether it's at Bagram or Guantanamo, and whether or not these individuals have access to American courts, and again, I can appreciate the difference, and I don't automatically say that Bagram equals Gitmo. But I think the more substantive issues are that we need to make a break from the barbaric actions of the Bush administration and establish a very clear and transparent rule of law. And we can't simply lock people away without charge and without any sentence or limit on their confinement. Many times they're out of touch with their families and they simply have disappeared. And this is not only immoral and illegal in my view, but it is a way that that feeds the opponents. It really helps recruit jihadists when they see the United States operating at such a base level.
I actually agree with you on all the points that you made. The reason I remain optimistic, though, is that if you get into the specifics of the executive orders and what the administration is trying to accomplish with those three executive orders, first of all, the treatment of the detainees wherever they're held is going to be a consistent standard that's in compliance with Geneva Conventions. It's going to include, I believe, the unfettered visits by the ICRC. So the conditions are different. Second, I do want to go back to the legalistic argument for just one small point, which is that I think that the administration wants to preserve its legal argument with respect to the differences that I mentioned while still issuing executive orders that going forward indicate that we're going to have processes and procedures in place, whether they're in a court system or whether they're in a commission system, not in the federal system. or whether they're just in compliance with Geneva Conventions where you do, you know, battlefield determinations, which we haven't been doing. I think all those things are going to be looked at with a view toward the future and not maintaining a regime where you confine people indefinitely without a hearing. Now, having said that, can I guarantee you that the people that are being held at Bagram or wherever else we might set up a detainee facility are going to enjoy the full panoply of rights and processes and procedures that we're going to provide people held on U.S. territory or Guantanamo? No, I don't think I can assure that. Assure you of that at this point. I think the administration is trying to look at the different situations whereby we capture people, and I do think that if you capture someone on the battlefield, it is a different situation, and depending on the conditions and the circumstances under which some people are picked up, you might see the administration arguing that these are no different than POWs that were picked up during World War II and held for the duration of the hostilities. The difficulty the administration is going to have, and it is a tough nut to crack, is that when can someone say the hostilities end? And if you're talking about a war on terror, which is the tactic, I don't think that's going to be a useful paradigm for them to use. However, if you're talking about specific hostilities in a given geographic area and given an area like Afghanistan or Pakistan where you have, again, a sovereign nation that's, you know, working very, very hard to preserve its own government, I think you have a different situation there. So there are so many perturbations to be worked out on who's being picked up, why they're being picked up, the circumstances, and whether this was active hostilities or not. But I think we really need to give this a little more time for these groups to study the situation, for the executive orders to be given effect before we make any kind of a decision that we're back to where we were in the Bush administration.
We're talking with Don Guter, retired admiral and former dean of the Duquesne Law School in Pennsylvania. 888-5-PETER-B if you have a comment. 888-573-8372. Admiral Guter, in the last few days we saw a report released by the Obama administration about the conditions at Guantanamo. And in essence, in a thumbnail, it argues that we are now in compliance with the Geneva Conventions. But I have up on my screen a report from the Center for Constitutional Rights. And in particular, they say at the MAX facilities, Camps 5 and 6, and also in Camp Echo, that the conditions in these camps are harshly punitive and violate international and U.S. legal standards for the humane treatment of persons deprived of their liberty. Solitary confinement, sensory deprivation, environmental manipulation, and sleep deprivation are daily realities for these men and have led to the steady deterioration of their physical and psychological health. What's your comment on these two contrasting viewpoints?
Well, I guess my first comment is I wish somebody would give me a trip to Guantanamo so that I could see for myself. I also saw the report that you didn't refer to. You've probably seen, though, that the vice chief of naval operations was sent down to Guantanamo and viewed the conditions. And I understand has already opined that we are in complete compliance with Geneva Conventions at all the facilities. So, you know, without being on the ground and seeing with your own eyes, I don't know how I could comment on it. I do know that some friends of mine who are, I've got one who's particularly concerned, for example, with medical ethics and what our psychologists and what our doctors are being asked to do. And he claims that that force feeding is continuing on some of the detainees who are on hunger strike.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's an accurate report or not. So it's very difficult. On one hand, I've received assurances that the conditions are in full compliance, and then on the other hand, I've read these reports that it makes it sound like very little has changed, and that would be certainly something that would surprise me very much given the assurances that we were given on the day that we were at the White House.
We're going to take a break and return with Admiral Don Guter, retired, as we mentioned, former dean of the Duquesne Law School. And you can visit the website campaigntobantorture.org to get more information. Your calls welcome here at the Peter B. Show, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And my email is peter@peterbcollins.com. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service features full service, friendly, fast, same-day service. Or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located at 4665 Soquel Drive at the intersection with Porter Street in Soquel. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
And protect your investment.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Are we tough enough?
I would walk 10 miles on my hands and knees. Ain't no doubt about it, baby, you are.
We're talking with retired Rear Admiral Don Guter. He also served as Dean of the Law School at Duquesne University, and he's a member of CampaignToBanTorture.org. That's the website address for that organization. And we're joined by Mike in Aptos, listening on the mighty KRXA 540. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, this, and your guest too, Admiral, this idea that we're not going to afford them civil rights like habeas corpus or something there in Bagram, those aren't civil rights. Those are human rights. And it's not up to us to decide whether we grant them or not. They're there. They're inalienable as our Declaration of Independence states. And here we are putting ourselves in this position where we get to choose whether to recognize them or not. And it's all a word game, it seems to me. It starts with this war on terrorism. We're having a war against a noun,
yeah,
which is just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives us license to do anything we want.
Well, just starting there, Mike, I'd really like to see that change, and also the whole Homeland Security nomenclature
is deeply offensive to me. It's like the fatherland or the motherland.
Yeah.
I can't believe we don't object to that. But, yeah, Russia had the motherland, Nazis had the fatherland, we have the homeland. Yeah. I mean, it's a march towards fascism.
All right, let's get a comment. Don Guter?
Okay. Sure. I think you're absolutely right. If we're going to fight a war on terrorism, it's never going to be over because terrorism is a tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're absolutely right about it. You know, one thing that that I have a difficulty with is that sometimes I think the American people think that terrorism started on 9/11. Terrorism has been, a part of the world history throughout time. And
we were considered terrorists by the British.
Exactly.
And Begin was a terrorist considered by the British. He blew up the hotel there, the King David Hotel.
Along with Zippy Livni's daddy.
Yeah. I mean, terrorism is just what people do when they don't have tanks.
Okay, that's a good point, Mike.
You're right, and throughout history, if you go back and, we're fond of, the military folks are fond of giving George Washington credit where credit is due with how we treated the British once we captured them during our own fight for independence. But if you go back and look at history at what George Washington said, told his generals to do with the Indians, that's a whole different story. So,
Mike, thank you for your call today. Admiral Guter, Guter, I got your name wrong there. I wanted to ask you if you're familiar with the case of Muhammad Jawad. He is now 23 years old. He was picked up as a teenager. He has been at Guantanamo for almost 7 years now. And he's in what we call Catch-22 squared, because the executive order issued by the president is suspending the tribunals. At the same time, he has a habeas corpus case that is pending. And it appears that some sort of gamesmanship is underway there to just delay any resolution of his case. Have you looked at the Jawad case at all?
I haven't looked at his case specifically. I know what you're talking about, though. I really do not think it's a deliberate attempt to play games to delay a release or a resolution. I think this administration is absolutely committed to the quickest possible resolution on each of the cases. And I think that, but that includes looking at the individual file of each detainee, and looking at the process that we've used thus far. One of the things that I was troubled to learn when the new administration came in is that the files on the detainees aren't even all in one place.
Yeah,
so,
isn't that scary?
It is kind of scary. So on what basis are they even holding people? So the other part is, of course, I think the administration wants to hold up on the commissions until they can take a look and see whether or not that's the process that they want to use on any individual.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the administration is pretty confident that there are some people, and I don't know what the number would be, but some people at Guantanamo that once they look at their cases, they might want to say that these people don't need to be held at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's others that they think they might be able to take to the federal criminal courts.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I'm positive that this administration isn't going to, we were talking earlier about splitting hairs on some subjects. I don't think this administration is going to be concerned if they're holding someone that they can get a conviction that they think is dangerous and they think they can get a conviction and hold them.
on a non-terror-related basis, I think they're going to do that.
I'd love to see it play out that way. Admiral, time for one more question, about a minute remaining.
Sure.
We've talked a lot with Phil Butler, who is a Navy man who served longer than John McCain by a year and a half at the Hanoi Hilton, and he's persuaded me that torture is not only immoral, it doesn't work, and that he was able to withstand torture because he knew that we as Americans don't do that.
Right.
Why are you opposed to torture?
Well, for, I would say, a host of reasons. First of all, you know, morally, it's just bankrupt. Second of all, I think, I agree, it's ineffective. If you torture someone, I heard someone say one time, if you torture does work, and it kind of scared me because I thought they'd switch sides on us, and they said, you know, if you torture someone, you can get them to say anything you want. It also is a wonderful recruiting tool for the other side. Mm-hmm. It also, whether you like it or not, it does put our folks in jeopardy. Some people, and what I mean by that is, some people say, well, you know, they're going to torture our folks anyway. We have no moral high ground to try to extricate anyone who's being held from any country, and use any moral persuasion on them and get other people to join in that effort if we're going to be torturing people.
Don Guter, thanks for joining us. Retired Rear Admiral from the Navy, also former Dean of the Duquesne Law School. Pleasure to talk to you, sir.
My pleasure entirely. Thank you.
And thank you for speaking out.
Thank you.
I certainly respect that.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. We got another one straight ahead. Colonel Ann Wright joins us right after the break.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
After the big stimulus, a drive for fiscal restraint.
Today, I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
The stock market sinks to a 12-year low.
The trend is, lower and lower and lower.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. President Obama says the $787 billion stimulus package is needed to confront this economic crisis, but in the long term, the country needs to get its deficit spending under control. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports.
It is now the president's guiding budget policy.
Cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
He hopes to achieve that goal by raising taxes on the rich, streamlining the government, and scaling back Iraq war spending. Mr. Obama also calls for reinstating a pay-as-you-go policy on federal spending.
Now, this will not be easy. It will require us to make difficult decisions and face challenges we've long neglected.
The president warns the country cannot and will not sustain deficits without end. He will elaborate on his budget goals and the administration's overall agenda in tomorrow night's speech to Congress and the nation. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
Today, the president hosted an economic summit meeting with key lawmakers. They heard from Robert Greenstein of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
To address the daunting long-term fiscal problem, everything on both the spending and tax sides of the budget will have to be on the table, and that we will need to place a particular emphasis on health care costs and health care reform.
Mr. Obama lectured the gathering about bipartisan cooperation.
If we're going to be successful moving forward, it's important for us to distinguish between legitimate policy differences and our politics.
When his former rival John McCain raised a question about the costly fleet of presidential helicopters, he agreed that it's an example of the procurement process gone amok.
The helicopter I have now seems perfectly adequate to me. Of course, I've never had a helicopter before.
Now this.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from the hood of your car.
Hey, don't worry about your engine, because I got it covered.
Yeah, well, you are the hood, but I'm still going to my Ford dealer.
All right, road trip.
Yeah, the Works Fuel Saver package is only $29.95 or less after a mail-in rebate.
Peanuts.
Oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection.
I can't beat that. Although, I do know a guy.
No, thanks.
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fee extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for $10 rebate details through 33109.
Reason number 48 to switch to Geico.
As much as you enjoy the experience, you won't have to go to the post office. We can automatically debit your checking account or even charge a premium to your credit card. It's easy and you never have to worry about mailing your car insurance premium again. But we must warn you, you won't get to use any postage stamps. I hear they're coming out with some pretty cool designs.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The stock market's losses of last week accelerated today. The Dow fell 250 points to 7114, its lowest point in nearly 12 years. Jason Weisberg, Director of Floor Operations for Seaport Securities, says there's plenty of pressure to sell and little incentive to buy.
There's no compelling reason for long-term investors to step back into the equity market.
Eugene Peroni of Advisors Asset Management says the market's still waiting for guidance from Washington.
Frustration is leading to anger because people just don't know where they stand with this plan, what it means as far as the tax codes, and so on.
Today, federal regulators said they stand firmly behind the banking system, but in a CBS News New York Times poll, Director of Surveys Sarah Dutton says there's a lot of skepticism.
57% of Americans don't have confidence that giving money to the banks will help the entire economy, and 59% think that Obama's proposals to help the banks would only help bankers and not all Americans.
Another case for anger management. CBS News correspondent Jim Taylor takes a look at new findings that anger can lead to cardiac arrest.
Here's Dr. Rachel Lampert, Yale University.
What we found, first of all, was that, yes, anger did increase the amount of electrical instability for many people.
They sat some heart patients down, asked them to recount an angry situation, and then they logged all kinds of electrical instability in the heart.
This tells us that the reason why this happens is because anger actually brings on measurable electrical instability that is associated with arrhythmias.
Bottom line, anger's bad for your heart?
Yep, I think that would be fair to say.
Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Calcium is good for your bones, and it might have other health benefits. The National Cancer Institute tracked nearly 500,000 people and found that those who consume the most calcium had the lowest rates of colorectal cancer. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your tires, your brakes, your battery, your oil and filter, your fluid levels, and your belts and hoses.
Would you check us, please?
Okay, okay. I'm on my way to the Ford dealer now for the Works Fuel Saver package. It'll all get checked or tested or changed or rotated or filled.
Ooh, filled is good.
For just $29.95 or less after a $10 mail-in rebate.
Woohoo! I love this guy!
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for rebate details through 33109.
Hi, I'm the foreman of a construction company. We just added Aflac as one of the benefits we provide for our employees. At no direct cost to the company, Aflac makes our foundation of benefits even stronger. My crew is so happy with Aflac, they're going on and on about it.
Hammer out the specifics. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to AflacForBusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Later this hour, we'll talk about the prospect of nationalizing American banks. Professor Thomas Ferguson and Robert Johnson, former Senate Banking Chief of Staff.
Now, I've been happy lately, thinking about good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world of one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. But out on the air to dawn, there are the beast train, oh, beast train, take this country.
Colonel Ann Wright returns to our program today. She's a woman who has impressed and inspired me. 29 years in the Army and Army Reserves, and then she jumped over to the State Department. She was there in Afghanistan back in 2001 when we reopened the U.S. Embassy, and she resigned her State Department post when the U.S. invaded Iraq. She has been with Code Pink for Peace and active on many fronts trying to end illegal and immoral wars. Colonel Ann Wright, welcome back to our program today.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's good to talk with you, and I want to focus on Gaza in a moment, but I wanted to ask your thoughts about President Obama's decision last week to add 17,000 troops to Afghanistan. Most Americans have never been there, but with the benefit of your experience on the ground, just how big a blunder do you think this is, and how crazy is it for the U.S. to imagine that with a paltry additional 17,000 troops, we can bring any kind of stability or a real controlled occupation to that nation?
Well, the whole question is, can you have a military solution to what's going on in Afghanistan? And the Afghan government, Hamid Karzai, says no, he needs to have negotiations with the Taliban. Some of America's greatest allies on the Afghanistan war, the British, their ambassador and their military commander said no. You can't have a military solution to this, so adding 17,000 people really isn't going to resolve anything, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll leave it there because I want to focus primarily on Gaza, and I want to direct people to commondreams.org. If you put Ann Wright in the search window, you'll come up with her piece that was published on February 13. Tell us about your trip to Gaza with Medea Benjamin of Code Pink and Ty Berry as well.
Absolutely. We were there about 2.5 weeks ago. We were only in Gaza a short 48 hours because the day finally the Egyptians let us in was the day that they decided to close the border 48 hours hence. And so we were only in Gaza 48 hours. But we saw a lot. We met a lot of people during those 48 hours. And we certainly saw the tremendous destruction that the 22 days of attacks by the Israeli military did on the civilian infrastructure of Gaza. And the Israelis were saying, well, we're trying to take out Hamas and the people that are firing the rockets from Gaza into Israel, something that I deplore also. I'm wished that the Hamas and the other militant groups would not fire those rockets because it engenders such a tremendous military response from the Israeli military. And mm-hmm. when you think of 1,330 Palestinians that have been killed in that 22-day war or attack, I wouldn't call it a war because there wasn't much response at all from the Palestinian side, but 4,500 wounded, severely wounded, and up to 10,000 structures that were destroyed. It was a tremendous attack on the people of Gaza.
And in simple terms of casualties, it was so disproportionate, 1,300 Palestinians, 13 Israelis, four of whom were killed by so-called friendly fire, their own forces. And as we look at the disproportionality, it goes beyond that, because Israel has locked down this open-air prison camp called Gaza for several years now. And to add military strikes from the air and from the ground in these heavily populated areas where you cannot distinguish civilians from guerrilla fighters, whether they're with Hamas or any other organization, or even freelancers, I just think it's immoral to launch that kind of military action into an area where this euphemism of collateral damage is something that you simply have to expect. You can't go into a situation like that and protect the lives of innocents.
Well, indeed, in the disproportionate response to those rockets, the collective punishment, really, that those attacks meant were on the people of Gaza, those are elements of what are called war crimes. And when you add into it the use of specific weapons that are not to be used in built-up areas, for example, white phosphorus, you look at the white phosphorus that burns through people's skin, that goes into their flesh, that We talked to one British doctor who, as we were coming out of Gaza, we were asking him, the horrible things that he had had to work with, and he said, well, it was when we were cleaning out the wounds from white phosphorus, and that as they cleaned them out, sewed them back up, and then put the patients onto the wards, and then the nurses would come back saying, doctor, doctor, come quick, the wounds are smoking. Also, the use of the DIME, D-I-M-E, or the dense inert material explosive, which has atomized tungsten in it, and which, when it explodes, sends a very intense stream of atomized tungsten out to the extent where so strong that it actually amputates people's limbs and cuts into their bodies.
Mm. Wow. Colonel Ann Wright is with us here reporting on her recent visit to Gaza. She's going back in a couple of weeks. If you have a question or comment, she's just with us one segment, so dial in right now, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And we hear from Alan Dershowitz and others who are staunch defenders of Israel that Hamas uses women and children as human shields. And that may be true. But, again, fundamentally, to launch a military assault on this compact, highly populated area, you can't. I believe that it's intellectually dishonest to then turn around and say, well, they use women and children as shields. When you're attacking in a zone like this, you don't have people who operate under rules of engagement. And so it strikes me as immoral and intellectually dishonest when, A, they try to say that this is a preemptive defensive maneuver, and, B, that, it's okay to go into these areas because, well, it's Hamas's fault. They're the ones who exploit women and children as shields.
Well, I think Alan Dershowitz has kind of lost his marbles on this. He's going after the students at Hampshire College that are saying that their university should divest from Israeli companies and American companies that do business with Israel because of what Israel has done on Gaza. And Dershowitz is apparently trying to put extraordinary pressure. He's a big personality in America, but I think he's definitely doing his own reputation a great disservice by what he is saying right now. I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, to everyone that the incredible military force that was used against the people of Gaza. And again, I will say, I in no way do I condone those rockets, those unguided rockets, which over the last 5 years, there have been several thousand of them which have been tragically sent into Israeli areas, and there have been, I believe, something like 25 Israelis that have been killed, and several hundred, though, wounded, and that's deplorable. But the response from the Israeli military in just smashing Gaza is a war crime, in my opinion.
Yes. Colonel Ann Wright with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And while the military action was underway, we spoke on several occasions with a Palestinian named Sami Habib. And one night, it was nighttime when we reached him in the middle of the night, he held his phone to the window as an Israeli tank came up and shelled the residents across the street from him. It was very graphic and really very personal to talk with him at that very critical time. In your piece at commondreams.org, you talk about the Al-Samouni family. Tell our listeners about what happened to them.
Yes, they are an extended family that live up in North Gaza, and the Israelis told that extended family to get all of their people into one building, and they did. And there were over 150 of them that went into one building, and then the Israeli military bombed it, and 37 members of that family were killed. Many others severely wounded. We went up to the area that family lived in, and the whole thing is just everything destroyed. The trees, farms that were the employment for the families just totally knocked down. All of the dwellings, all of the houses, just like a hurricane had gone through it. We talked to one of the women there whose husband and daughter, and one of her daughters is in a hospital in Saudi Arabia. Two of her kids were killed. She has a son that's in a military hospital in Cairo. The military said, well, we made a mistake. We didn't mean to hit that building. We knew there were people in it, but we didn't mean it. But, you know, the Israeli military has extraordinary intelligence abilities, and they have the most sophisticated military weapons that the United States can sell them or give them. $4 billion a year that we give to the Israelis most returns back for the purchases of U.S. Military armaments.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that when the investigations are finished on, that there are a lot of Israeli military officers that perhaps would stand trial on purposeful targeting of civilian populations, which is a war crime.
Yeah. Well, I hope we will have investigations and try to determine that. And, Anne, we've also heard reports of olive trees that were planted by international peace groups were apparently intentionally targeted for bulldozing by the Israeli military during this incursion into Gaza. And before we go, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to mention the play called The Lonely Soldier Monologues. You sent me a note about that, and it's debuting in New York March 5th through the 22nd. Tell us a little about this.
Surely, these are monologues about women soldiers who had served in Iraq, and the monologues are written from a book that will be coming out in the springtime by author Helen Benedict, who's written a lot about women in the military, and particularly about sexual assault of women in the military. And they're taking parts of that book, and they've created monologues, which will be presented by actors in New York City. And we would encourage anyone on the East Coast to go to those.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I won't be able to be there in the beginning part of it because I'll be part of the national delegation, which will be returning to Egypt and Gaza. We're leaving the 5th of March and returning the 12th. We'll be there for International Women's Day, and we're hoping we'll be able to get into Gaza. Letter of invitation from the United Nations Women's Unit in Gaza. Asking to come in solidarity with the women of Gaza.
Well, Anne, thank you for this update today, and please check in with us when you get back from your subsequent trip. Thank you, Anne Wright. Colonel Anne Wright, retired from the U.S. Army. We'll take a break and return on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you want to join me in the next segment, grab a line. You want to talk about the Oscars or anything else that's on your mind? I'm open to it. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Slow down, you move too fast.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast, and I'm inviting you to join me Sundays to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last right here on KRXA 540.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms, but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather. In Monterey County, we have a traffic hazard on Chulalar River Road. At Chulalar, there's a goat and a couple of horses running in the road, so look out for them. Making our way up to Santa Cruz on Highway 17, just north of Laurel Road, there's been a no-injury traffic collision. A vehicle has hit the center divide and is on the right-hand shoulder now. In weather, it's partly cloudy, and we've got temperatures in the low to mid-60s on the coast and inland. Tonight we have a chance of showers with lows in the mid-40s. Tuesday will be partly cloudy with highs in the lower 60s. That's your AM 540 traffic and weather. Have a wonderful afternoon, everybody. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and the chiropractor's office is down the hall and on the left. A guy with a crick in his neck just popped in the door asking. It's an open segment here for a few minutes if you'd like to join me. It's 888-5 Peter B. 888-573-8372. Went to some friend's house and drank and watched the Oscars last night. I thought Hugh Jackman did a good job. Not as funny as Billy Crystal or Whoopi Goldberg. And in some ways, I liked the way they revamped some of the presentations. Best Actor, Best Actress. They had five previous recipients up there to give the award. And instead of, you know, a voiceover with a video of a clip from the film, you heard, you know, an actress talking to another actress, an actor talking to another actor. I thought that was pretty powerful. I was really pleased to see Sean Penn win Best Actor for Milk. I thought that was a very powerful film. I only saw The Reader recently. Kate Winslet really, really wowed me in that film. And so I was pleased for her victory. And also Penelope Cruz for Vicky Cristina Barcelona. That was a very fun film. And she made it happen. And I think she deserves that credit. I have seen Slumdog Millionaire, and I thought it was an interesting film, a nice film, a good film. I didn't really think it was the best of the year in any particular way. But that was the tone of the Academy this year, and so be it. And also, I have yet to see The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I don't have 3 hours to kill, and I'll rent it somewhere down the road. Also, this wasn't an Oscar contender, but over the weekend, we spent a dollar and rented W. And I certainly give Josh Brolin credit for the character of George W. Bush, and some of the others were pretty good, too. Richard Dreyfuss as Cheney was inspired. But Oliver Stone owes us all an apology, because he whitewashed Bush. He made him seem like a victim of the intelligence communities on Iraq, and there was only a passing reference from Daddy, Poppy Bush, to Junior about the stolen election of 2000. Come on, Oliver. You can do better than that. So those are my movie comments for the moment. And Brian is joining us from Manchester, New Hampshire. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Peter. You know, I was just reading that there's something, you know, remember Philip Zelikow from the 9/11 Attacks Commission?
Right, and David Ray Griffin gives him co-chair credit for really making sure that commission didn't get into anything too sensitive.
Yes, if you ever see the movie about the God love them, the Jersey girls there, the 9/11 press for truth, and that shows how he just impeded every attempt to get it, even a drop of the truth there. But he's ready to foreignpolicy.com. You know, it's an interesting, it's an online version of the Foreign Policy magazine.
Right.
It was founded originally by Samuel Huntington. He's a great Harvard historian and a political writer. He passed away late in 2008. And he made the great historical book about the Clash of Civilizations, but he did not want it to happen between Islam and in America and in the West after the Cold War had ended. And he was against the March 2003 Iraq invasion by George W. Bush. But anyways, at foreignpolicy.com, Phil Zelikow was saying that he wants Barack Obama's administration to be ready to strike and destroy North Korea's missile test. It's not a nuclear missile test. It's a
typo dong 2 or 3. Big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, John Bolton took the week off and went skiing at Vail or something like that, but it's that's a crackpot idea.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, North Korea is not a threat to the United States. It wants to be a threat to South Korea, and I think there are a lot of better ways of dealing with that than using a punitive missile strike when, you know, a missile test is launched by North Korea.
Ways. Went back to the July 1994 Bill Clinton anti-nuclear treaty with North Korea that was working very well until this unelected president came into office.
Thank you, Brian. Good to talk to you today. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Friends in low places. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. I quote the AP Dispatch. Children broke into Bollywood dance numbers in the narrow lanes of a teeming Mumbai slum as they gathered to watch Slumdog Millionaire's domination of the Oscars. Two of Slumdog's child actors, Rubina Ali and Azharuddin Mohammed Ismail, hail from this desperately poor neighborhood, and their every appearance elicited squeals of joy from the crowd. My eyes couldn't believe that I was seeing Rubina in America, said one friend. Unquote. Here's a movie that, if you look at it objectively, is completely implausible. Something that could never really happen anywhere, never mind India, that somebody rises from the slums to win Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And yet, in those very slums, and you figure that in a place where home is a lean-to made from a moldy blanket, they'd know how utterly implausible it all was. Even in those places, they celebrated because a few of their own had made it to America. And the bigger story, that it wasn't just the elites who liked the film. It banked $160 million because American audiences were cheering for this Muslim kid to win. India has 200 million Muslims, second only to Indonesia. And last night, the American film industry gave a positive story about them, as implausible as it might have been, their highest award. I think we made more friends in a few hours last night than in 6 years of nation building because of a movie that cost a paltry $15 million and has returned more than 10 times that to its producers. All these years, we tried to make friends by cultivating world leaders and giving them fighter jets. Just send film companies, Hillary. Just send film companies. Now this.
All right, construction crews. Everybody ready?
Ready in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Honolulu. Oh, who's in Honolulu?
It's Tim from Boston. I just got transferred to Hawaii. Winky good weather they got here.
Buy one Motorola i576 phone for $69.99. Get up to 4 free with Sprint, the fastest national push-to-talk network. Call 1-800-NEXTEL-9. Only on the Now Network. Fastest based on initial call setup time. Offers for eligible business accounts only. See Sprint stores for availability. Ends 4/18/09. Subject to 2-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit per line. Restrictions apply.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033. Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, asking the question, is it time to nationalize the banks? And if so, what are the terms? And how do we protect the taxpayer? And if you're a banker, I'd love to hear from you on this issue. 888-5-PETER-B. That's our toll-free line, 888-573-8372. We're joined by co-authors of a piece called Nationalize Failing Banks? Think Twice. And they are Professor Thomas Ferguson, who's a contributing editor of The Nation and a professor of political science, University of Massachusetts, Boston. And also with us is Robert Johnson, formerly a managing director at Soros Funds Management, and he was chief economist at the Senate Banking Committee. Gentlemen, welcome to our program today.
Hi, Andy.
Nice to talk to each of you. Robert Johnson, let me start with you, because moments ago I received an email from my pal Steve Pizzo. He was co-author of a book about the savings and loan debacle of the 80s called Inside Job. He taught me everything I knew about that. And his email is has the subject line, "When George is worried, I'm worried." And he forwards an article by Reuters, "Soros sees no bottom for world financial collapse." He said the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers in September marked a turning point. "We witnessed the collapse of the financial system," Soros said at Columbia University. "It was placed on life support. It's still on life support. There's no sign that we are anywhere near a bottom." Would you share that current view?
Yeah, yes, I do. I think the stimulus program that was just passed is probably too small. It may alleviate the pace of the downturn in the United States, but it's not being accompanied by clear and crisp action to resolve the banking crisis and encourage credit allocation.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, in Europe, the Eastern European countries are having a tremendous time, and there is not a clear and coherent policy response there. And in Asia, exports are falling off the map everywhere as the U.S. consumer retrenches. So I believe this is a world crisis. It's a world crisis that is amplifying in part because policymakers are not making the tough decisions vis-a-vis banking system recapitalization and repair, the thing that Tom and I wrote about.
And Professor Ferguson, your comment?
Well, look, if things improve, you'll know it. I mean, you've pretty much reached the point now where you've got most radio stations and TV stations are desperately hunting anybody they can find to give you good news.
No, actually, we're chasing down advertisers.
I understand there is, of course, that problem. We will rise above small, mundane details like that. But, yeah, you know, basically the U.S. and the rest of the world has turned into Atlantis. Everything is underwater.
Mm-hmm. And And so the article you wrote about the prospect of nationalizing the banks, Robert Johnson, as you read the Geithner sketched out proposal, is there room to fill in the blanks there and say, oh, by the way, things have gotten so bad, we need to come up with some form of nationalization?
I would say things have gotten so bad that we need to fill in the blanks that still exist within the Geithner plan. What I see is a somewhat, let's say, translucent to opaque approach to writing checks to the banks, but not a lot of clarity on how the taxpayer will be compensated as a result of these enormous contributions to fill the holes in those balance sheets.
Mm-hmm. And Professor Ferguson?
Look, they're obviously still, you might call the piggy bank stage here. You just keep dropping coins into the bank. You might as well throw it down a well. I mean, these guys need to get off the dime. You can see how, I mean, the last time, well, Geithner's made a couple of announcements, right? Neither one was greeted with overwhelming happiness by markets. You can see what the sort of rumors today, the rumors and discussions, of, the announcement this morning by the Treasury and the other bank regulators that were effectively what they said was, we'll write whatever checks necessary to money center banks. And, you know, that's pretty much all they said. And, of course, you know, this is ridiculous. I mean, these guys, it's actually sort of stupefying, actually. I mean, these people came into office knowing there was a problem. You know, what's taken them so long to actually move in an efficient and effective way?
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you about the efforts to date, the so-called TARP program. A WAG sent me a series of photographs that apparently making the rounds on the Internet over the weekend, and I'll do my best to describe this, but it's best when you actually see the sequence of photos. There's a car that went off the wharf into the water, and they bring a tow truck in to lift the car out of the water, and the tow truck and the car go tumbling into the water. They bring in a larger tow truck, and it attempts to lift out the car and the tow truck that went in with it, and it follows them into the sea. And then there's another scene where they bring in an even larger tow truck that has these big feet claws to keep it from falling into the drink, and they leave us there to guess the outcome of that sequence of events. But is that what we're looking at, that we're just kind of fumbling with larger and larger amounts of money, Robert Johnson?
Yes, as long this is a problem that could have been nipped in the bud, as the policymakers are fond of saying, getting ahead of the curve last year at the time of the Bear Stearns bailout. But they were reluctant to do that because they knew it was very politically unpopular in a presidential election year or a congressional election year for them to start using taxpayers' money to support Wall Street, which, as we all now know, had enormous bonuses and inspired a lot of animosity. So they let it delay until the ditch got deeper and deeper and deeper, and now, as your photographic metaphor suggests, it's kind of pulling us all down with them.
Yeah. Tom Ferguson?
Yeah, well, look, all I can do is echo Rob here. So maybe we might, you know, the question is, we probably ought to ask, what should they do?
Mm-hmm.
And there the answer seems pretty obvious. They've got to stop just thinking cash in the banks. In a sort of aimless fashion. And you know, it's one very troubling aspect of this is they're only now getting around to talking about a stress test, though when you look closely at what they say, they're actually saying, well, they're sure that virtually all the banks will pass the stress test. In other words, they already know the results. These guys need to do some fairly serious bank inspection, and they need to do it in a hurry. I mean, you know, Franklin Roosevelt did that in a bank holiday. That's not the thing you want to do if you can avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
But they are rapidly forcing everybody into a situation where that's going to be the only means left to deal with the problem. I mean, they've just let this thing drift, and what's actually happening is they put in dribs and drabs of cash. That vanishes as though you're throwing, you know, yeah, a crane into the water or something like that. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't fix the problem. They need to get the bad assets out of the system, and they need to recapitalize the banks so they can start lending. And they shouldn't do that for free, given that most of these guys are almost certainly insolvent at this point, a point that, you know, you can readily verify by inspection. The taxpayers should simply take them over, and then the government should do it. and then you can actually pay us instead of having us lose all this cash. After you get the bad assets out, you recapitalize the bank, you can resell the banks to investors. And at that point, you can pay off some or all of what it cost you. I mean, the Swedes did exactly this in the 90s. I'm not sure I believe their story that they made all their money back.
Mm-hmm.
But they obviously did very well out of the subsequent sales. I mean, the real problem here is to get, just effective action quickly where they stop futzing around with the management, which wants to do everything except get diluted. And for them and their shareholders, who are, of course, extensively the same in a sort of where you had a, quote, aligned the interest of shareholders and the management, they need to get moving on this. And until they do, nothing much is going to work.
Well, I personally am not as expert as either one of you, but it just seems obvious to me that some form of nationalization is going to be necessary. Now, let's define terms here. Exactly what do we mean, Professor, when we say nationalize the banks?
Well, it means the government becomes the share of the owner, basically. They're going to have to just take it over. I mean, you understand here, you're not stealing people's property. These guys are broke. Their assets don't cover their liabilities. So, I mean, the presupposition here is they really are insolvent. If they're not insolvent, you could help them out, and you could charge them for that. I mean, again, you can do it with, you know, less than total nationalization. But look here, when you look around and see, you know, zombie banks just, you know, taking TARP money and then sticking it somewhere else in the holding company and not in the bank,
mm-hmm.
You know that these guys are really insolvent. And so you're not taking anybody's property. You need to take them over.
Well, and Rob Johnson, aren't the banks really just functionaries now? Because my money, what's left of it, is insured by the FDIC. And so it doesn't really matter to me which bank my money is deposited in. I have general faith that unless the government completely blows up, that my money will be there, whether it's called Wells Fargo or Washington Mutual or a bank from the past, Eureka, that doesn't exist anymore. So the other part of this is that we have already pumped trillions of dollars into the banks. It's a minimum of $2.5 trillion, and by some accounts, there's a total of some $8.5 trillion that has been committed in one form or another. So
that's total bad assets.
Shouldn't we really be getting value for the risk that our government is taking with our money? And doesn't it make sense at this point just to say goodbye to the management of these banks? They have failed. They screwed it up. And we've got to get them out of there without expensive parachutes and restructure these banks so that going forward they could be reprivatized, and that's what would be used to pay back our risk investment. Is that a thoughtful scenario, Rob Johnson?
Yes, it is. It's right on target. In essence, these things, as you said, with the insured deposits, will continue to operate. They can even hire or retain many of the same employees on the payroll. This isn't nationalization where, Che Guevara takes over the means of production to direct it to the state's aims. This is a situation like a bankruptcy of a venture capital firm, like the bankruptcy of an airline, where you have to do financial restructuring. You have to inject new capital. The people who inject that capital become the owners. In the old days, with venture capital firms, it was, say, an investment bank. Somebody like Kleiner Perkins or Warren Hellman's bank would come in,
mm-hmm.
and they would put the capital in, and what they call cram down the guys whose equity was exhausted,
right.
and they would take over ownership.
Mm-hmm.
The same guys would stay in the chair and operate the company. The same people can stay in chair and operate the banks. But the people who put in the new capital, the taxpayers, are the people who get paid when you reprivatize it, as you suggested.
And, Professor Ferguson, what kind of new terms or constraints do we need to put on a nationalization process so that you and I don't get screwed here?
Well, I mean, look here. I mean, if you do them with a public bidding process, there have been a lot of when you reprivatize, I actually think that's probably relatively straightforward. I mean, Rob and I wrote about concerns we've got. If you look around, you see it's pretty interesting. A lot of folks who are, well, Republicans, who've been singing financial deregulation that suddenly said, let's nationalize the banks. And, you know, you got to say, hey, what's going on here? You know, if you got Franklin Roosevelt saying, let's drive the money changers from the temple, and then suddenly Republicans start advising you to buy the temple, you got to say, hey, what's going on? And, you know, it's pretty obvious that you got two deals here that are closely intertwined. One is on the pure privatization issue itself. It's obvious that a lot are thinking hard about maybe trying to buy a bank. I mean, that is to say, as you reprivatize them, they buy them. There's obviously a concern. It's crazy for the public to fork over all this cash, get the banking system fixed up, and then sell it into the hands of a small gang of oligarchs. I mean, that's just crazy. The other part of this is when you take over the bank, the usual procedure is you take the bad assets out of the bank. You put it into a so-called bad bank. And then you hope to resell some of that stuff, you know, sometimes over years. I mean, that's the famous toxic waste. But you hope over 5 or 10 years you might get some value out of that. Now, the process of reselling those assets, boy, do private firms, hedge funds, and private equity love to do that. And you can see plainly in all along the eastern seaboard and in the left coast, too, I dare say.
Yes.
Hedge funds and private equity firms thinking, public-private partnership sounds great. Just, in effect, having killed the financial system, they're now hoping to make money off the burial.
The venture vultures are licking their chops saying, yeah, you go ahead, privatize or you know, socialize those losses, and we'll be right there for you to cash in on the way back up. We've got to take a break and return, gentlemen. Stand by. Thomas Ferguson and Robert Johnson have published this piece. You can read it at thenation.com, and it's in the forthcoming issue of the International Journal of Political Economy, if you happen to subscribe to that. Your questions and comments are welcome. Should we nationalize the banks? If so, what are the terms? 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And if you'd like to partner with me to buy a bank so we can get a bailout, just email me, okay? That's fullofit@peterbcollins.com.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Santa Cruz, we have a two-vehicle collision with no injuries on Highway 129 at Lee Road. And on Glenwood Drive at Stonewood Drive, we have a mud, dirt, or rock slide, and the debris is blocking the northbound lane, so use caution there. And weather, it's partly cloudy out in some spots, and we've got sunshine in others. Temperatures are in the high 60s to lower 50s, and tonight will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and lows in the mid-40s. Sunset is at 5:56 p.m. tonight. That's your AM 540 traffic and weather. Have a fantastic afternoon, everyone. The Peter B. Collins Show will return in a moment.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Is your child misunderstood? Are you frustrated with the medical and educational systems? Do others misinterpret the energy of your child? Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Through the power of intuition, I can help you. Schedule a session to learn more. Sign up for my newsletter to receive free information every month. Educate yourself through my books and articles. Visit intuitiveteachings.com or call me, Jennifer Cruz, at 831-233-8388.
This is Bob Oliver with the Quantum Leap and our new time, Monday evenings at 8 p.m. Join us and be on the cutting edge of reality. Tune in the Quantum Leap, Monday evenings, 8 p.m. on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. No time for a bank holiday, but how about a dreadlock holiday? Huh?
I was walking down the street.
If I had hair, it'd be in dreads.
Concentrating on trucking right. I heard a dark voice beside of me. And I looked round in a state of fright.
We're talking about the prospect of nationalizing America's insolvent banks with Thomas Ferguson, professor of political science, UMass Boston, and he's a contributing editor of The Nation. He also is the author of Golden Rule, the investment theory of party competition and the logic of money-driven political systems, which is certainly way over my head.
I don't like cricket.
And his co-author, Robert Johnson, formerly a managing director at Soros Funds Management and former chief economist of the Senate Banking Committee. And we've got some callers with comments and questions. Chris in Salinas, welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Thank you, Peter. I just had a quick question. With the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act,
right,
what impact do you think it played in on this whole banking situation? I really think it had a big impact. And also, what regulations of the banking system would you recommend?
Let me start with Rob Johnson on that.
I would say that the allowing of commingling of activities alongside what you might call the essential functions, like meeting payroll or keeping Peter's deposits and so forth, increases the danger of the system. I think the particular danger that was manifest this time, the leverage mortgage crisis, was not attributable to the relaxation of the Glass-Steagall constraint. But the spirit, the philosophy of Glass-Steagall repeal is consistent with the spirit and philosophy of deregulation that led to this, and more importantly, the spirit and philosophy of not enforcing regulations on the part of regulators who were intimidated or cowed by free market fundamentalism.
Chris, thank you for your question.
Right.
Okay. And Tom Ferguson, as you look at the situation here, are we simply going to repair the flawed system and try to put this giant back up on its feet? Or do we have the political courage to actually restructure the system to prevent these kinds of failures and the incredible leverage that was permitted, 32 to 1? I mean, I play craps.
Right.
32 to 1 is an unconscionable level of risk to take. And how are we going to...
Actually, 100 to 1 in some parts of the... Look, if you've seen any profiles in the courage on financial regulation, you let me know. The truth is, this is probably the third strike here. I mean, they had a fairly serious time when the early derivative crash in 1994, and then we all know about how the revelations, which often come from email messages. We know that lots of Wall Street houses were deliberately selling junk to people in 2000, 2001. All that stuff came around, and you got a whole wave of regulation that was supposed to cure the problem. None of that stuff, not Sarbanes-Oxley, not any of the other changes they made, helped hardly at all in blocking off, this sort of last great wave of deregulative frenzy. And, you got to say, how much does it take? I would have said, well, I wouldn't have, actually. I'm a political scientist. I do money in politics. But any reasonable person would have said after the 2000-2001 revelations that, you'd think any group of people with an ounce of common sense could have put an end to, you know, like allowing brokers to recommend stocks they, you know, have zero interest and belief in to their clients.
Oh, but we fixed all that with Peekaboo, the accounting oversight board. They got it all dialed in, all under control. Here's Andy in New York. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Andy. Go ahead.
And
just about a minute.
Mr. Johnson. Yeah, what about clawbacks from executives and also that other caller, Chris? I think, right on. We need regulation, man. We need to bring back Glass-Steagall, break up these banks. And also, let's fix the Commodities Futures Exchange Act of 2000 and fix the securitization problem, the derivative problem with the CDSs. Thanks.
Okay, Andy, thank you. That's a quick list there.
Look,
Rob Johnson?
You've got to fix the political financing system in America. It's real important that the discussion of finance not turn into a purely technical discussion about rules, even leverage, or stuff like that. Your fundamental problem here is the guys with a lot of cash go in and run Congress, run the presidency, and, you know, they work on them. They essentially then end up dominating the regulators. You know, the single most revealing moment in the whole business may have come in the wake of the Lehman Brothers failure, when John Mack there at Morgan Stanley decided it was time to stop short selling, and he just dials up Charles Schumer, and it later came out Hillary Clinton, and, you know, a day or so later, they stopped it. I mean, if you know, when you can dial a senator and get instant regulatory response like that,
yeah,
which reflected years of cash flowing in sort of like the Hudson River, that's your problem.
All right.
That's the fundamental problem you got to deal with.
Gentlemen, I thank you for a lively discussion, and I want to recommend your article. People can find it at thenation.com. It's about nationalizing the banks. We've been talking with Thomas Ferguson and Robert Johnson. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye now.
Good to talk to you both. Coming up next, more of the Peter B. Collins Show. Share a podcast with a friend. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. With the financial bailout and economic stimulus plans, the federal budget deficit has ballooned in a matter of months. But long-term, the administration vows to let some air out of that balloon. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports.
President Obama promises to cut the deficit in half by the end of his current term.
We cannot and will not sustain deficits like these without end.
Mr. Obama also told a White House summit on fiscal responsibility that he wants to return to a federal pay-as-you-go policy, end failing programs, and stop tax breaks for companies that ship jobs overseas. He'll elaborate on the goals in tomorrow's speech to Congress and the nation and when he releases his budget on Thursday. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
This is the largest budget deficit since in the midst of World War II.
Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com spoke at the White House summit. While he's concerned about the national debt, he said deficit spending now is unavoidable.
Our long-term fiscal problems will be magnified many times over unless policymakers are successful in quickly stemming the current economic and financial crisis. This requires an aggressive federal policy response, which will result in even larger budget deficits in the near term.
When the closing bell rang on Wall Street, the stock market had fallen to its lowest point since 1997. The Dow dropped 250 points to 7114. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason blames continuing concern about the financial system.
The government just has to continue to give as much information to the public and to investors as possible about the state of the banks. Basically, they've got to talk people out of this, you know, state of, you know, of distrust that they're in, and they've got to show that they're doing everything that they can to back up the banks.
In a joint statement today, regulators said they'll ensure that banks have the capital and liquidity they need. In a CBS News New York Times poll, Director of Surveys Sarah Dutton says people have soured on financial bailouts.
More Americans disapprove than approve of having the federal government provide money to banks and financial institutions. 50% disapprove, just 39% approve. And that's more negative than what we saw earlier this month when 47% disapproved and 42% approved.
Only 22% said the government should give more aid to automakers. Ticketmaster infuriated Bruce Springsteen and his fans when people trying to buy tickets to a Springsteen concert in New Jersey were redirected from Ticketmaster's main website to a Ticketmaster subsidiary that charges more. Today, New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram announced that those who were overcharged will be compensated and...
For all the consumers who entered their credit card information but did not get tickets... Ticketmaster will provide tickets, the tickets that the consumers were attempting to get.
Ticketmaster admits no wrongdoing. It blames a software glitch. The price of oil fell $1.50 today to $38 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Got a question. What's the worst thing about buying a used car? Could it be the uncertainty of not knowing what you're really getting? Bingo! Now I have an answer. Honda Certified Used Cars. They're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with an incredible 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Did the comfort level just go up in here? Thought so. Honda Certified Used Cars. It's the next best thing to new.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
People are feeling it a little more these days. The ows are getting a little more owier, and the uggs are getting just a little uglier. Shoulders and necks are tighter, and when you exercise to work it all out, the soreness can linger. Tiger Balm feels your pain. Stress can make you ache and ugh. Tiger Balm patches and ointments work fast, and they're the powerful way to conquer pain, no matter where it comes from. Go from ow to ah with Tiger Balm. Works where it hurts. Available everywhere.
The experts advising President Obama on the troubled U.S. automakers don't have much firsthand experience with Detroit's products. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive takes a look.
Hardly any of them own American brand name cars. The Detroit News checked car registration information and found that almost every member of the new auto industry task force owns a foreign car. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner owns a new Acura. Senior Advisor Larry Summers owns a 14-year-old Mazda. Two task force members don't own any cars. Of course, many of these officials are now chauffeured around by U.S. government drivers in American cars. Dan Revive, CBS News.
An employee at a McDonald's in Edgewater, Maryland, allegedly gave a whole new meaning to Happy Meal. Undercover officers went to the drive-thru lane, ordered food, and when they got to the window, asked 27-year-old Donald Bryce if they could also buy some marijuana. They could, and Bryce was busted. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from the hood of your car.
Hey, don't worry about your engine, because I got it covered.
Yeah, well, you are the hood, but I'm still going to my Ford dealer.
All right, road trip.
Yeah, the Works Fuel Saver package is only $29.95 or less after a mail-in rebate.
Peanuts.
Oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection.
I can't beat that. Although, I do know a guy.
No, thanks.
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fee extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for $10 rebate details through 33109.
Reason number 48 to switch to Geico.
As much as you enjoy the experience, you won't have to go to the post office. We can automatically debit your checking account or even charge your premium to your credit card. It's easy and you never have to worry about mailing your car insurance premium again. But we must warn you, you won't get to use any postage stamps. I hear they're coming out with some pretty cool designs.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
You can add your voice right now, right here. The free speech zone is underway, wide open for your phone calls. You know how it works, right? There are barely any rules. You can talk about any subject from any viewpoint, and you can call me from anywhere within the sound of my voice. We got plenty to talk about, so get on the line. Should we nationalize the banks? Can we trust Obama to really end torture and illegal detention? And what should we do with old horses?
I feel so extraordinary. Something's got a hold on me. I get this feeling I'm in motion. A certain sense of liberty. I can't cause an affair. I don't care if I'm here tomorrow.
My lines are open for you, 888-5-PETER-B. Toll free, it's 888-573-8372. And if you watched the Oscars last night and a favorite won or didn't, you can let me know about it. 888-573-8372. And before we dive into more topics and excessive opinion making from your humble host, I was commenting to Katrina during the break that I've been on the air for 2+ hours today, and I haven't coughed once. And I don't know about you, but the cold of the winter of 2009 is a doozy. I'm a pretty healthy guy, and, you know, when it was coming on, I hit all my immunity buttons and took massive amounts of vitamin C. And it really hung in there, and hung in there for almost a month. So I just have to say how good it feels to feel good. And if you're laboring through this thing, I wish you the best. I recommend scotch in the evenings or whenever you're not driving. It's good for the throat, and it helps you forget about the other things that don't feel so good. So that is my personal note for now. Let's talk about the Oscars. Now, I am not the world's biggest moviegoer. I don't follow Hollywood very closely. And I often have to nudge Kathy when we're in the theater and say, who's that? Who is she? Who is she up there on the screen? I vaguely know who she is, but I can't put a name to it. And still, I enjoyed the process this year. Just in the last week or so, I saw Doubt and The Reader. Both very powerful films, well-scripted, well-acted. And they appeal to a more intelligent moviegoer. And if you like action flicks and comic book movies, that's fine with me. I'm not trying to put that down or act like I'm superior in some way. But I haven't seen Dark Knight. I probably never will. I saw the first two Batman cartoon full-length feature films. And I saw Dick Tracy, and I've seen X-Men and a few of those. And frankly, they don't go very far for me. Spider-Man is kind of cool because of Tobey Maguire. But by and large, I have no objection to Heath Ledger being honored after his death. And frankly, I thought Slumdog Millionaire was a pretty cool movie. I saw it about a month ago, and I enjoyed it. But I don't think that it's that special. And I also think that the way the story was based on a television game show and the repeated, well, the mechanism there where the kid was on the show, asked a question, and that led to a flashback to a life experience that informed his answer. Well, the 16th time or whatever it was, I kind of got tired of the predictability of that. And, you know, for best sound, I don't remember anything really special about the sound on Slumdog Millionaire. But people in the Academy who care a lot about that apparently did and do. So if you have a thought, a comment, a film that you want to recommend to people, like Milk, I really was pleased to see Sean Penn win the award, and use the opportunity to inject the only political moment into the Oscars last night. And I didn't see any coverage beforehand, but he referred to some hateful signs that he saw as his car was coming in to the area by the Kodak Theater there at Hollywood and Vine. And he basically lectured those who supported Proposition 8 here in California that they will live with shame, and I think he referred to their grandchildren will live with that shame if they don't change their minds. So I don't think it was too heavy-handed, and I wish he had just invoked the spirit of Harvey Milk there a little bit. And the people that I was watching the Oscars with noted that while Robin Wright Penn, Sean's wife, gave him a big kiss when he was announced the winner, he didn't remember to thank her for anything in there. So, any comments you want to add about the Oscars, about the news of the day, about the Obama administration and their intentions regarding detention, interrogation, our civil rights, and the civil rights of those who are captured by our government? I welcome your calls. And we kicked off the show earlier today with Jay Trunzo and Dave Pauly talking about the situation in Montana, where some horse owners are lobbying to reinstate slaughter as a legal possibility and open slaughterhouses there in the Big Sky State. And you heard two views opposed to it. But if you'd like to comment on that, I welcome your call. 888-573-8372. This entire hour set aside for your phone calls, so don't be shy. Use your First Amendment rights and join us in the free speech zone. Up first, Jim in San Francisco. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Really a great honor for San Francisco, Melk's Sean Penn's award there. I'm calling about something a little different.
Yeah?
And it's related to the a cartoon in the Post that was both racist and implied violence.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jim, let's take a minute to describe this for people, because I became aware of it late last week, and I just know that there are a lot of people who are in the dark about this. So there's a story out of Connecticut about a woman who had a chimpanzee. And she fed human drugs to this chimp, antidepressants or something like that. And the chimp reportedly went wild and threatened friends of this woman. And the cops were called, and they put the chimpanzee down. Okay? So that's the backstory. And it works in a tabloid world. I, frankly, was somehow sheltered from the original news, and so I had to catch up. So now we're caught up on the baseline story. Then, the New York Post, owned by Rupert Murdoch, publishes a political cartoon, and Jim described that for us.
Well, it's it shows several policemen who are aiming, they're actually firing, at an image of a chimpanzee laying on the ground.
Right.
And the, I misplaced my glasses here, so I don't have the exact wording. Do you remember the wording in the cartoon? It's,
It's something like, we're gonna need somebody else to write the next stimulus package.
Yes, that's right.
Something to that effect.
Yes.
That this animal that's just been put down, which is a chimp, and that of course is a racist shorthand, as a slur on black people.
Right.
And so
because they were often called monkeys by people in the South.
Yeah.
And so that was very offensive and very disrespectful.
Well, the tastelessness of this is certainly quite obvious, I think, to most people. But given that we have an African American president who is given credit as the author of the stimulus concept, if not every element of the $789 billion package, it was a really ugly racist swipe at the first black president of the United States.
Exactly. And so now the outrage grew, and Reverend Al Sharpton was talking with some people about what to do, and they decided that part of the reason why Murdoch, his newspaper, could be so arrogant in this fashion is because they have so much control over the news in New York City.
Hmm.
And it turns out that they got a special exception. So they're allowed to have more newspapers and more TV stations than other people are. And it now looks like this becomes a reason for the FCC to look at that waiver they got.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me define that for people.
As some people are saying, but it's really taking a look at the exception.
Right, and let me define that for people, Jim. When Murdoch moved into New York, he owns a television station there, which is an affiliate of the Fox Entertainment Channel. And also, it's not really germane here, but the Fox News Channel is based in New York City. He also owns the New York Post. And in order to own a VHF television station and a major newspaper in the same market, you need a waiver from the newspaper cross-ownership rule of the Federal Communications Commission. So it, in reality, only applies to his ownership of the TV station, but it is a manner in which you can bring him to heel for the transgressions in the newspaper.
Yeah, and so now there's a petition online which has been developed, and people, I really urge people to go sign it, because I don't think we often get a chance to bring Murdoch before FCC hearings. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very good on a lot of levels.
All right, Jim, what's the web address for the petition?
Okay. The web address is www.nationalactionnetwork.net.
Okay, that's Sharpton's group.
Yes, yes. And so the thing is that, you know, there's been a real slowness in terms of holding hearings on the people who abused us for the last 8 years.
You're right about that.
And maybe this is going to be the crack in that armor.
All right.
If we get this hearing going, maybe some other people will see that it leads to at least some light, if not action.
All right, Jim, I got to run to a break, but thanks for bringing that to our attention today. I certainly appreciate it. We'll take more calls in a moment, but you got to get on the line first. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And speaking of no-shows at hearings, Karl Rove, absent without leave from the House Judiciary Committee again today. There's some sort of an extension, and maybe it'll happen next week, maybe not. We'll take more of your phone calls right after a break on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Summer in Santa Cruz, you just can't beat it. It's time for friends, family, fun, and food. Whether it's an afternoon barbecue or a dining room banquet, it all begins with getting the best quality food at the best prices. For nearly 70 years, Shopper's Corner Market has delivered both. Shopper's Corner is the oldest family-owned and operated independent grocery store. It's where the locals shop.
I like their meat department. That's what I buy here.
They have a good organic selection.
Things you can't find other places.
Enjoy the friendliest service and fastest checkout at Shopper's while taking advantage of the everyday low prices on USDA USDA choice meats, fresh local seafood and produce.
Their produce is great. Actually, I shop around quite a few different places, but I always come back here because they have the best.
The variety of stuff you find here you don't find other places, and the service.
Shoppers has a vast assortment of cheeses and specialty foods, along with one of the best wine selections in the Monterey Bay area. Shoppers Corner, on the corner of Soquel Avenue and Branson 40 in Santa Cruz, or visit them online at shopperscorner.com.
I shop here because of the fact I live around the corner.
Shoppers Corner, it's where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather. Right now in Santa Cruz, we have a traffic hazard on Felton Empire Road at Empire Grade Road. Also in Santa Cruz, on Highway 129 at Lee Road, there's been a no-injury two-vehicle collision, and CHP is on the scene there. In weather, tonight will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and temperatures in the low to mid-40s. We'll have south winds of 5 to 15 miles per hour. On Tuesday, expect more clouds with highs in the low 60s. Right now, here are some temperatures. In Monterey, it's 60 degrees. In Salinas, it's 67 degrees. And Santa Cruz is 58 degrees. Well, that's your KRXA traffic and weather. Have a great evening, everyone, and stay tuned for more of the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the free speech zone. You can express yourself right now. 888-5 Peter B. We do take calls from iPhones, Blackberries, and other fancy wireless devices.
2 a.m.
And if the law requires you to use a Bluetooth wireless earpiece device, go ahead and use it. I have to say, I've been violating that rule quite a bit because I have a Bluetooth that makes it very hard for people to hear me. And so when I'm driving safely along, I do pick up my cell phone and use it without being hands-free. And I want to thank that highway patrolman who decided not to pull me over yesterday afternoon. 888-5 Peter B. Join the conversation here. Jim in San Francisco alerted us to Al Sharpton's new petition. And I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of Al Sharpton. The Tawana Brawley case a few years ago showed him as a pandering kind of guy who doesn't always check the facts. But on this one, I've got no beef with Reverend Al. He's asking you to sign a petition at nationalactionnetwork.net. It's right up here on the homepage. We, the undersigned, do hereby request an immediate waiver of the waiver. I'm sorry, an immediate review of the waiver extended to News Corp and Rupert Murdoch. A waiver that allows him, them, to own, control one or more television stations in the same city where they own one or more newspapers. That is New York City. This seems to give an imbalanced monopoly to the public airwaves and an imbalance in commercial speech in particular, in light of their blatant insensitivity to issues of race, such as the New York Post cartoon, and bias through the use of those publicly owned and federally licensed communication tools. So it's an end run. The offensive material was in the newspaper. But there isn't a federal newspaper commission. And so Sharpton is exercising his right to go before the Federal Communications Commission. Let's see what happens when I click here and try to sign the petition. It says Sharpton will lead a delegation to Washington this week to meet with FCC commissioners. Okay, good for you. It just opens up an email, and it's addressed to membership at the nationalactionnetwork.net. So that's how you would do that if you want to sign on to the petition. And that is your free speech right. I'll probably do that a little bit later on. Katrina just pointed out to me an item at the Huffington Post that was also highlighted by Professor Mark Crispin Miller in his News from the Underground. If you want to sign up for that, he emails regularly with a lot of interesting material that doesn't make the MSM, the mainstream media. And you just go to markcrispinmiller.com to sign up for that. Anyway, here's Ira Forman writing at Huffington Post. Today I learned that CBS News has named Jeff Balaban, a New York Republican activist, to serve as senior VP of communications. A decade ago, I debated Balaban in New York. I represented the Democratic Jewish community, and he spoke on behalf of Republican Jews. During the debate, Balaban claimed that after his most recent job in Washington, he became convinced that Democrats are inherently bad people, and Republicans are fundamentally good people. And Forman writes, what planet does this guy come from? It's astonishing that CBS News would name him to its senior management. Balaban is also quoted as saying during the election last year, Obama is incredibly dangerous. In 04, let's see, JTA reported that Balaban said AIPAC has touted this election in 04 as a win-win, noting Bush's strong support for Israel and Kerry's 100% pro-Israel voting record. Balaban wrote, Bush and Kerry, win-win? Republicans and Democrats indistinguishable? It would be funny if Jews weren't being killed. Ouch. And following his appointment at CBS News, Balaban said he has always worked well with Democrats and Republicans, as long as they don't know what he's thinking. Huh. Well, that's another thing worthy of protesting. Somebody call Al Sharpton, will you? Tell him to just slide over to CBS when he's finished at Fox. I've got room for your call, so get on the line and let's talk. 888-5 Peter B, the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, open systems architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Kenneth writes, change he wants in 08 is to have my wife not yell at me all the time. Kenneth, that's her job. Women are verbal. We could be total silence, not a word. Man, we're bonded, you and me. You walk into a room with two women sitting in total silence, you better leave. I was doing a show in Sacramento last week, and there was a couple in front that said they've been married 30 years, and I asked the guy, what kind of behavior can possibly make a marriage last 30 years? And this guy goes, ask her.
Richard Stockton with a minute from planetcruise.org.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Duncan Robinson. Four on three at the left side. Jamal Boykin, the open floor, goes in and Vianney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
No broadcast of this Thursday's game. Next game for the Cal Bears is on Saturday, the 28th, UCLA at the Haas Pavilion, 5:30 p.m. on KRXA 540.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel.
Our top item today, discussing an article in the Congressional Quarterly about congressional kickbacks to the lobbying group PMA, Fox News' Sean Hannity falsely claimed that only Democrats have been implicated in this so-called culture of corruption.
And tonight in Hannity's America, with the Democrats securely in the majority, Washington's culture of corruption continues to thrive. Now the Congressional Quarterly reports that more than 100 House members secured earmarks for clients of the PMA group. Oh yeah, they're all Democrats. Welcome to President Obama's brand new Washington.
Although Hannity only mentioned Democrats in his report, 44 of the 91 members of Congress named in the article were, oh yeah, Republicans. But today's most outrageous comment goes to Pat Buchanan on MSNBC, blaming the housing crisis on the minority community.
The feds leaned on banks and threatened some of these banks. You've got to make more loans and push them out. You've got to help, frankly, in minority communities.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage.
Don't forget, Mel.
Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Yes, here in San Francisco, we even embrace tolerance for homosexuals, gays and lesbians, and transgenders and bisexuals. You probably know that in the tiny, tiny minds of right-wing Republicans, San Francisco is this haven, this bastion of everything that's wrong with the United States, with America. I once had a very conservative father-in-law, Larry, no longer with us. And when he heard I was moving to San Francisco, he said he had a whole litany that this was like a loony bin for people who couldn't make it elsewhere. And he ticked off, you know, sexuality and drugs and religious morality and probably liberal was in there somewhere. And that's what I'm reminded of as I see this transcript of comments by the new chair of the Republican National Committee, a token African-American, and he is a token. Ask yourself how many black Republicans there are in elective office around the country, and you'll find nearly zero. And so Mike Steele was on the right-wing Mike Gallagher radio show where they were deploring and expressing their disgust that the movie about Harvey Milk won two awards, Best Actor for Sean Penn and Best Adapted Screenplay. And both Penn and the writer, whose name I'm sorry I don't know, stepped up and were unapologetic. The writer appears to be gay, and he described how Harvey Milk was one of the key people who made him comfortable with his own sexuality. So let's listen to this clip here as Mike Steele and Mike Gallagher explore the limits of their tolerance when it comes to gays and lesbians. Here we go. I think it's going to play. Let's see here. Well. It seems to be turned on here. Let's see. Up, up, up. Come on. Well, I'm not getting any audio out of this, but the transcript reads, Gallagher, is this a time when Republicans ought to consider some sort of alternative to redefining marriage and maybe in the road, down the road, to civil unions? Do you favor civil unions? And Michael Steele, no. What would we do that for? What, are you crazy? No. Why would we backslide on a core founding value of this country? I mean, this isn't something that you just kind of like, oh, well, today I feel, you know, loosey-goosey on marriage. Gallagher, so no room even for a conversation about civil unions in your mind? What's the difference, says Steele. So this is the guy who claimed he was going to redefine the Republican Party and open it up. And every American family, whether you are right-wing Republican evangelicals or far-left liberal nuts, everybody's got a gay member of the family, a relative, somebody you work with. And so this shows that they're banking on intolerance and that hate is a driving force of the Republican Party. It's the unifier. And over the weekend here in California, the Republicans held a state convention in Sacramento. Schwarzenegger was really lucky because they finally signed this phony budget last week so he could escape. He didn't show up at the GOP convention. He went to a national governor's meeting in Washington and showed up on ABC with George Stephanopoulos. But the Republicans are on the skids. And I'd like to turn the tables here because so often I'll turn on my TV and there's, say, Pat Buchanan, well-known, all-Republican, all-the-time, all-conservative, all-white kind of guy. And he's routinely asked for advice on what Democrats should do. What's the future of the Democratic Party? How should the Democrats handle this? And so I'd like to make you the pundit for the moment and ask you to call in with your advice for the Republican Party. If you were, say, Abel Maldonado, the guy who is viewed as a sellout by Republicans because you voted for tax increases here in California, well, I kind of relish the way Maldonado is now a target poster boy for the far-right no-tax Republicans and for people center to left who just think he's a despicable guy because he took advantage of this budget crisis created by Republicans to try to get some goodies for himself, including an open primary in the future so Abel Maldonado can run statewide and avoid the shackles of the far right that met at that convention to vilify him. Now, it's interesting, at the Sacramento meeting, the Republicans attempted to pass censure resolutions for all six of the legislators who broke ranks, got rational, and said, you know, we're not going to drive this bus off the cliff. I'm sorry. If we don't raise taxes, the state will go broke, and frankly, that's irresponsible. Only six Republicans were able to be swayed into that, and some of them were bought off, frankly. A guy from Orange County got some goodies for Orange County. So what is your advice to the Republican Party? Well, one thing we could offer is just the idea of bankruptcy. Why don't you file for political bankruptcy? That would be the most honest thing you could do. And maybe you could get a bailout from some of your fat cat friends. So let me know what you think about that, and if you have advice for the Republicans on their future, you can share it with me, and I would be most appreciative. Now, have you heard about this guy, Rick Santelli? I don't watch CNBC almost ever. I mean, I occasionally surf by it. But I consider business television news in this country to be nothing more than propaganda. It's a group of cheerleaders with people like Jim Cramer, who I think should be institutionalized and force-drugged on a regular basis. But these are not journalism operations that just happen to cover business. These are commercial operations. And the way it works is they report something nice about Lockheed Martin, and Lockheed Martin buys advertising schedules on CNBC or the Fox Business Channel. Sweet, isn't it? And oh so pretty. But last week, this guy Rick Santelli, who I had never heard of before, went on CNBC, and he reports from the Chicago Board of Trade, or whatever that's called now. And maybe you've heard about this, because only a couple of 100,000 people saw it originally. That's the audience at CNBC. But CNBC put it up on their website, and over the weekend, some 1.5 million additional people viewed his outburst. So here he was reporting from the trading floor at the Board of Trade. He had these traders around him, and these are not paupers. These are not poor people struggling to make a living. These are rapacious capitalists. And I don't have the quotes in front of me, but he responded to Obama's mortgage crisis intervention program, housing bailout, whatever you want to call it, with anger, saying that why should we have to pay for the mistakes of these schlubs? He may not have used the word schlub, but that was the gist of what Santelli said. Now, right away, this is not reporting. This is commentary. And I think you're clear that I'm not a reporter. I do commentary. I'm an opinion guy. But he's allegedly a reporter, and here he was injecting his opinion. And then he turned to these traders behind him and roused them to a chorus, saying, am I right, guys? And they all, oh, yeah, you're right, Rick, you're right. And then he closed by saying something to the effect, President Obama, I hope you're listening. So that's Rick Santelli. And today he went on a hostile broadcast hosted by G. Gordon Liddy, the Watergate burglar and former felon. And Santelli, who was dismissed by White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs last week, was asked to comment. So let's see if I can get this clip to play. It's Rick Santelli and my old radio. Well, we used to be on the same station in San Francisco, and I was embarrassed by him on a daily basis. Let's see if we can hear this.
You know, people went to war to fight over the freedoms we have. You know, when the press secretary said those things about me, Gordon, I can take it. But I'm a family man. I work hard. I have to put three kids through college. Think about this. Not only did he say I didn't know what I was talking about, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but he started that press conference saying, I don't know where he lives. I don't know where his house is. This is the press secretary of the White House. Is that the kind of thing we want?
It's a veiled threat.
It really is. Oh. You know what? This isn't about left or right. I wasn't for any of the bailouts under the last administration. But I don't realize or recall reading the Declaration of Independence of the Constitution where it says that once you vote for somebody in November, you put duct tape over your mouth and you can't say a word for the next 4 years. That's just not right.
No, it isn't. And that's a veiled threat. You know, we know where you live.
It's quite scary. And I'll tell you what.
Oh, come on. Come on. I think when he said we don't know where his house is, it's not like they were going to drive up and visit him, say, in a Michelle Malkin stalking effort. But for them to respond that this is some kind of a veiled threat just shows their own paranoia. And G. Gordon Liddy is the guy who gave advice to his radio listeners a few years ago that when a federal agent comes to your door, shoot for his head. Because he's probably got a vest on and you don't want him to live. Shoot for his head, said Liddy. That's the level of paranoia that lives there. John at Carmel Valley, you're up on the Free Speech Zone. Welcome.
Yes, I just want to congratulate you for the discussion in the last hour of The Economist. You know, the very sobering assessments they offered. It was that situation where I wanted to hear it, and at the same time, I didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, I hear you, John.
Just the most one more big mix of grim news, but I guess the public, because I've heard several commentaries lately where someone has said in an NPR discussion or just somewhere else that the public seems in big denial as to how bad this economic mess is. Even I think you and I are finding it's worse than we would have imagined.
Well, and John, we've got this problem where I think Geithner is soft-pedaling it. I think he's afraid to offend his friends in the Millionaires Club. And it really appears to me that we're going to nationalize the banks sooner or later. And the sooner we do it, the better off we'll be, and the less damage will be done. And it pains me to see Obama, who I think does understand the gravity of the situation, and the stimulus package was an effort to do something about it, but it certainly won't fix, well, it won't really fix anything. It'll help stimulate some demand over the next 3 to 4 years. But it doesn't fix the lack of faith that people have in the markets. And when the very wealthy, vulture capitalists and even people who aren't vulture capitalists, just those who, you know, make money by investing, when they stay on the sidelines, that, to me, is the indication that things aren't going to get any better real fast. And so I think we do need to nationalize the banks. And through that process, I want a restructuring of the system. And I'm not going to get it, but I'm still going to ask for it, John, because what we have is these DLC Democrats who are as pro-business as you know, Phil Graham and the Republicans that they run against. And they are going to permit us to try to rebuild this monster. And, you know, I believe you can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again, but they're going to try. And they're going to pour trillions of dollars into doing just that. And eventually it will probably work. You know, I believe that markets will ultimately rule, because no matter how the financial system and computerized trading and the international banking system work, I have needs, you have goods, we're going to make a deal. So the marketplace ultimately will come back to life, I believe. It's a matter of how long it takes and how much damage there is and how much it costs us to try to repair it. And fundamentally, I want to see us repair it by changing the model, by changing the structure of it, by not permitting a small group of people to have so much control over the global economy. But I don't hear anybody talking about that. They just want to throw more money at the same people who got us into this mess.
Yeah, but you heard the guy that pointed out, I guess it was the professor who said the big problem that has to be corrected before any. Because, again, one of the problems is if regulators won't regulate, or if they're coward, you can have the best laws on the books, but if they're not enforced, and clearly it's as frustrating as going overseas and importing your goods from China and just putting your name on them. That's what's beaten the unions beyond anything else. And what's especially frustrating is that it wasn't maybe complete revoking of laws. It was more, it sounds like, more a failure to enforce the ones that were there. And
yeah,
how do you fix that?
Well, all you got to do is let the regulators regulate and stop the whole deregulation is good mantra. That's where it starts. John, thanks for your great call today. We'll return to more calls in just a moment. And everybody has called with 10 minutes remaining. We'll do our best to get everybody on the air. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. I'm currently checking the CHP boards, and we have no incidents to report at this time, so enjoy your commute this evening. And weather, our forecast calls for more clouds this evening with a chance of showers. Temperatures will be dropping into the mid-40s with south winds of 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tuesday will be partly cloudy with highs in the lower 60s. And Wednesday and Thursday, we're going to see more clouds and a good chance for more rain. Right now in Monterey, it's 59 degrees. In Salinas, it's 65 degrees. In Santa Cruz, it's 55 degrees. Well, that's your AM 540 traffic and weather report. Have a terrific evening, everyone. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
There's more than one side to every issue. In fact, there's usually more than two sides. On Thursday nights from 9 to 11, we examine issues from every angle on our show called A Different Perspective. Sometimes we have guests bring a viewpoint that isn't often heard elsewhere. Other times we'll discuss our different perspectives on the issue of the day. Either way, call in and give us your different perspective. Join us, Mark Leonard, Tony Rudy, Billy Sunshine, and me, Jack Hart, on A Different Perspective. Thursday nights at 9, here on KRXA 540.
Hey, what are you having for lunch?
My personal chef is making it now.
Your personal chef?
Yeah, the lunch lady in the school cafeteria.
Kids should think of me as their personal chef. Well-balanced meals at school are very important for their bodies and their minds. Make sure they eat right and take advantage of the personal chef in their school cafeteria.
Stay fit, eat right. Looking good, California, is a public service of the California School Nutrition Association. For help with your family's nutrition, visit stayfiteatright.org.
Don't play that song, that achy breaky song, the most annoying song I know.
Yeah, it was.
And if you play that song, that achy breaky song, I might blow up my radio.
For no particular reason, I just felt a need to inject a little Weird Al Frankovic here. All right, let's see if we can get four calls on in just a few minutes here. Karen in Sacramento, welcome. Oh, no, this is Brad in Santa Cruz. Sorry, I blew it.
Hey, you wanted...
There we go, Brad.
You wanted suggestions for the Republicans?
Right, yeah.
I think they should go to Topeka, Kansas, and visit the Eisenhower Museum.
Ooh.
It's stunning in its simplicity.
Huh.
And you get there the sense of, you know, this very American Republican,
mm-hmm.
you know, who had all the best values, best Republican values at heart. You know, he was a fiscal conservative, he was against foreign entanglements, and yet he was for foreign relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But he said a really key thing about taxes, and I got the quote in front of me. He says, we cannot afford to reduce taxes and reduce income until we have in sight a program of expenditure that shows that the factors of income and outgo will be balanced. You know, it was Republicans who ran up the biggest debt in history.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just aren't the same Republicans. They got to look back to the past before Reagan.
Yeah, they can't see that far back. Thank you, Brad. I appreciate that. Now to Karen in Sacramento. Thanks for calling, Karen.
Hey, we have a constitutional convention happening tomorrow in Sacramento. I know you have a constitutional background. Is this indicating a crisis in what people... I've not been to one before.
No, this is an effort. I'm trying to remember what measure they're looking at, because calling a constitutional convention is just the first step in trying to amend a constitution. So is this related to California's two-thirds requirement to pass a budget?
It could be. All I got was something from Derek Cressman at the Common Cause, and
right.
He's telling everybody to be at the Sheraton tomorrow from 9 to 2:30.
Hmm. Well, can you drop by and let us know what's going on there?
I sure will, and I appreciate that horse lady on there. I'm one of the 1% of Americans who are vegetarians.
Oh, okay.
And my father was a bank examiner for the state of Wisconsin, and he said we should have nationalized those banks a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do it. It's just a matter of how and when.
All right.
That's my opinion. Thank you, Karen. Billy in SoCal. Hey, Billy.
Loser.
Which one?
No, that's the word that Santella used that you were looking for.
Oh,
that
thank you.
That word was loser.
Yeah.
You referred to those losers. And he did, by the way, later apologize for that.
Oh, I substituted schlubs.
Yeah, which was good, too, I thought. You know, I had a funny experience. Of actually, he was on my TV. I was watching CNBC while listening to you. So I was, and he was on with Larry Kudlow, who is, because you did explain, I thought, very correctly, pretty much what goes on at CNBC. Larry Kudlow being the worst of all of them, he literally said, I just want a faith-based market. And coming from him, it's sort of interesting, because here's a guy whose life was so screwed up that he was a Jew, born a Jew, he converted to Catholicism.
Ooh.
Can you imagine when you need to be able to, you know you get into heaven just because you say, I believe, and on Saturday night you get forgiven?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, so, I used to watch.
My message to the Republicans?
I tried to watch Kudlow and Kramer a few times, and it was just awful. I mean, Kramer's impossible to listen to, and Kudlow is just a right-wing apologist.
Hey, hang on. You know, when you talk about Kramer, you're just attacking loud ex-Philadelphians, and I don't like it.
You got,
I know who you're really going after now.
You got me there, Billy.
Okay, buddy.
All right. Let's squeeze in Anthony from Eureka. He called at the very end here. You get 30 seconds, Anthony. What's on your mind today?
I'll give you the conclusions, P.B. Collins, before I give the arguments. One, like Andrea, like Antonio Yuhas, the oil scholar.
Yes.
Just like Hugo Chavez, Venezuela president, just like you, just like me, and just like even Alan Greenspan, we should nationalize the banks and nationalize the oil industry. Number two, we want to debunk.
Gotta keep going.
Debunk the stock market, Wall Street, Ponzi scheme. Bucks.
All right. Anthony, I got to leave it there. Roy Rogers is singing at you.
Hi, bro.
Thanks for your call. And thanks for listening to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I loved it so much, I'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same devices. Talk to you then.
Smile and until then.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the Internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the Internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your Internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It was a White House summit on the nation's financial future. President Obama brought key Democrats and Republicans together to talk about budget priorities and spending restraint.
I believe it is time for a frank conversation about the fiscal challenges we face. They're challenges that concern every single one of us, no matter where we are on the political spectrum.
While defending the economic stimulus and the bank and auto industry bailouts, he pledged to reduce the deficit he inherited by half during his first term. CBS News correspondent Chip Reed has more.
Basically, the president argued that for the short term, we have to spend this massive amount of money to get the economy going again. But then we need to be working on another track, looking a few years ahead and really cutting seriously. The way he would cut most of the money is by winding down the war in Iraq, ending the Bush tax cuts for people who make over $250,000 a year, and cutting spending, and especially for the real long term, reforming health care.
The stock market tanked today with a loss of 250 points. The Dow fell to 71.14, its lowest level in 12 years. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason reports the sell-off was triggered by reports that Citigroup is asking for more government help.
What Wall Street is asking is, if Citigroup is this bad, how about the rest of the country's big banks? That's what you're wondering. And until this stress test, which starts on Wednesday, is launched, and we really get a sense of how these banks will do under the worst-case scenario, you're not going to have peace of mind down on Wall Street.
CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson reports some financial firms that have been in the news lately are operating overseas, helping their wealthy customers avoid paying U.S. taxes.
Guess who's turned up in a new government report about tax havens? 11 giant recipients of your bailout tax dollars. Together, they've collected more than $227 billion from Citigroup to Morgan Stanley. Even as they benefit from the tax money, they operate hundreds of subsidiaries in places widely known for helping people.